Hello, hello. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee here, as we are pretty much every Monday for tonight's edition of Sportsnet Tonight. And boy, it's funny how much can change in just a couple of days. Obviously, being a busy weekend in the NBA. Last time I was talking to Sam and last time I was talking to you, we were wondering what's going to happen with Fred VanVleet. Will he get his money from the Raptors? And about 20 minutes after we went off air, we opened our phone to some great news. Yes, Fred VanVleet back with the Raptors. Not only does he sign for a pretty team-friendly deal, he also does a little cap gymnastics that's got so very excited about next summer as well. Sam, how you doing today? Obviously a little bit better now that Fred VanVleet back in the fold.
Yes, sir, Gunner. It was a very exciting Saturday to see that. You know, other than, you know, the snow flying this weekend, pretty good weekend all in all. That was, a little bit of a kick in the pants yesterday, looking out the window and seeing that happen. You know, it's November. It doesn't usually, it happens. It's Canada. I understand that. I didn't send any tweets about it, but little early for that much, I would say. I think that was more of a mid-December snowfall, so I was kind of, you know, a little bit bummed out about that. You know, admitting a defeat on the golf season is never easy, but yeah. The news of Fred VanVleet signing certainly made my weekend a happy one, but, you know, there was lots of stuff to get into. You know, Serge and Mark heading to their respective LA teams, but yeah, Fred VanVleet, man, I feel like he's a real Raptor. You know, him sort of signing here kind of confirms that fact, the fact that he loves it here, the fact that he's willing. You know, with some of these contracts that got handed out over the past, I don't know, 5 days or 4 days or however long it's been since the free agency was open, I was pretty impressed with the ability of the Toronto Raptors to get him on that number. I mean, there's some guys that, you know, I've borderline never heard of that were getting close to $60 million. So the fact that Fred VanVleet got $85 million, and like you said, that sort of cap gymnastics that they pulled off there, you have to be thrilled with it, Gunner, no?
Oh, you're ecstatic. Now, we are going to dive back into the Raptors, but you open the door, and I'm going to walk through it for just a quick little bit of hot weather talk there. The snow, it came. I just moved. I've got some lovely evergreens that I see out my window. It definitely was feeling much more December-y than November-y, if you will. I don't think either of those are words, but I just made it so. Also, I forgot about, you want to talk about Fred VanVleet being a real Raptor. I forgot about one of our real sports in Canada, and that's shoveling some wet snow when it just hangs around in the driveway for too long. Just moved out. Hadn't had to do that in a while. It's probably been, nearly a decade since I've had to get out the shovel and do it. The back's barking this morning, but that's okay.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
because you were an apartment guy for so long, right? So you never even had to consider shoveling. And shoveling is, you're right, it is a sport. It'll get you feeling, you know, it'll get you feeling some kind of way. You know, you'll put on that jacket, you'll put on your, gloves, your toque. And by like your third shovel, you're like, oh boy, I got to get a layer off here. I'm sweating. The glasses, we're both glasses guys, both four eyes. The glasses start getting all foggy, all covered in snow. You know what? This is the time of year where I like the snow, you know, like heading into December. I'm like, it's a nice change up, you know, like we had 21 degrees 2 weeks ago. It's nice to sort of have some seasons here. But yeah, shoveling is not exactly the most fun thing to do. It can be extremely satisfying, though. Once you're finished and you're looking at your little, like I've just got a little area in front of where I live. Like I don't have a ton to shovel, but it's like the path and like the little steps up to the front door. And I do the sidewalk in front, too, because I'm such a great Samaritan. And once that's done, oh boy, I'm just like looking at that. I'm rubbing my hands. I'm like, what a person I am. I am just the best shoveler ever. So there's definitely some satisfaction to it. But the snow, give me snow until, let's say, December 28th, and then have it be 24 and sunny again. Does that sound okay to you?
I love it. Now, you want to talk about biting off more than you can chew. I forgot how exhilarating shoveling can be. And I've got a shared driveway with my neighbor. And you know what? I thought, why don't I be a nice neighbor? Until about halfway through the driveway, and then I'm like, what am I doing? I can't leave half of the driveway shoveled. I got to finish the job, but I definitely was huffing and puffing back and forth and wondering what I was doing. But you're right. I felt like I accomplished something, and with me being the lazy guy I am, not too often I can feel that way. So, yeah, it felt good to puff my chest out and also know if the mailman comes by, he's going to be safe because you got to protect those essential workers, as me and you have opined about so often. All right. I'm glad. Got that off my chest. talked about the snow. We're in Canada. Maybe we shouldn't have been. What we got to talk about, though, is this Raptors. I mean, the Fred VanVleet news, I think as free agency was progressing, I think people were less and less concerned. You know, obviously, there was always the possibility that some team, be it the Knicks or whoever else, was going to come in with a massive number. But just based on everything you were hearing, whether it be from our own Michael Grange or the more national guys like Woj, it really felt like it was going to be him ending back here in Toronto. Now, that's the good news. I guess, we talked about the cap flexibility there. If you're not aware of what happened, Fred VanVleet starts at, I think, about 21, and then he dips down to 19 next year. Then he jumps back up to 22, 23 as the deal progresses. But, of course, that's opening the door for the rumors. You know, you shared a tweet with me the other day. If you thought Raptors fans were making a lot of noise about Giannis before, the fact that they let effectively, you know, hey, he made his own decision. The fact that they let Serge walk, would not give Gasol an extra year as well, it looks like, and Fred's able to help them out in this way. Boy, there is a ton of smoke about Giannis next year.
Definitely. And, you know, There's lots to get into what you said there, but we definitely have to talk about Serge, because I understand Marc Gasol leaving, and, you know, I don't think he was he was obviously an extremely important contributor to the two of the best years of my Toronto Raptors fandom, but I don't think he was the Raptor that Serge Ibaka was, and it broke my heart, Gunnar. I have to admit to you, man, like, I really, in my heart of hearts, you know, there was obviously the possibility that Serge was going to leave, but I really didn't think he was going to. I really thought that he was going to be a guy that stuck around here for maybe another year or two, and just was kind of that Raptors guy, you know? I just kind of never pictured him ever leaving, really. And the fact that, you know, he did leave, and the fact that it was the Clippers with Kawhi and Lawrence Frank and that, you know, weirdo Steve Ballmer... It hurt, buddy. Like, there's not a whole lot else I can say other than it hurt. And I don't know necessarily, in terms of a basketball fit, what he's going to do out there. I think, you know, he's still got a lot to give, and I think he's still, you know, in the system of the Raptors, he was a perfect kind of player. But, you know, we all watch Serge, and we all love Serge, but there's definitely a lot of moments with Serge where you're like, okay, buddy, just relax a little bit out there. We don't need that jumper right away. We don't need this right away. And away from Kyle Lowry and away from the sort of Nick Nurse system and away, I'm not sure what he's going to look like. I think he was probably in this perfect spot in Toronto. But Kawhi obviously wanted him there. He obviously knows what he brings. And he left the Toronto Raptors to go there. And I think, you know, the obvious conversation to bring up with that is what Serge and Mark think of the Toronto Raptors and their chances at being a contender in the NBA, right? That's the obvious sort of parallel to draw here, because Mark is at the end of his career. He's got maybe good year left in him. And last year he was already looking like he was completely out of gas. So we'll see how that goes, but playing with LeBron can't hurt. But, and what Gasol and Serge leaving, like, they obviously look at those two teams of having way better chances to make it to the finals and potentially win an NBA championship, and rightly so. So I think it hurts as a Raptor fan twofold to see those two guys leave, because, you know, they're beloved Raptors and everyone loved them, but it also sort of signals that maybe the Raptors, you know, days of being a contender are somewhat over, Gunner. Is that fair to say, or do you think I'm overreacting?
I think the Gasol one is totally fair, because it felt like Vet Mim was all he was going to get anywhere. I guess the Lakers gave him the second year, but I don't know. From all indications, the Raptors weren't willing to do that, but I don't know that a second-year Vet Mim is so valuable that you need to make that be your deciding factor. The fact that he thinks he can go win a ring in L.A., and it's not just win a ring in L.A., it's play with the most iconic player of this generation. It's play for a franchise where his brother was an icon. Like, there's a lot of things at play there.
You want to talk about post defense, you want to talk about the defense on that team, having AD, Marc Gasol, and LeBron on the floor at the same time, how are you ever going to score the basketball? Like, that's just three of those guys together. It's just, I feel like, a defensive stalwart. But anyways, continue, Gunner.
Well, and then I'll turn it to the other side of the floor as well. It's like, not Anthony Davis isn't so much this guy, and if Rondo was still there, that'd be a wholly different picture. But you have in Marc Gasol and LeBron two of the most gifted passers of their generation, obviously on a bit of a sliding exciting sale for Gasol because of the position he plays, but his ability to orchestrate things, and you know, you put him on the floor with LeBron, I can only imagine the way that ball is going to whip around. With Serge, I'm actually not quite sure how to read into it, because on one hand, he definitely wanted the money, he wanted the extra year, that was a huge part of it, but it felt like, so it looks like from reports, he got 19 over 2 years with the Clippers, and the Raptors were willing to go 12 for 1 year. So I think part of it is that he did want to have the ability to have that second year kind of locked in, because look, when guys, I do wonder if part of it is he saw Marc Gasol, he saw how valuable he was during that Raptors title run, and he looked cooked at points last year. And I do wonder if it's Serge kind of looking around and going, boy, when it ends, it ends in a hurry. So I do want to have that extra stability. I think there's part of it as well that, yeah, it's a better title fit. But I think it's going to be a rude awakening for Serge. You think of the teams he's played on. And, you know, the Thunder, everything wasn't always rosy there. But those guys got along so well early on in his career. And then you think of what he had with this Raptors team where, you know, we talk about it all the time. And I'm sure fan bases elsewhere roll their eyes, culture, but it's such a huge part of what made the Raptors fit, and the Clippers are polar opposite of that. It feels like they're constantly at each other's throats. They didn't know that Harrell was leaving, Pat Bev's upset, Kawhi and Paul George are the two most passive leaders I think you could have in this league. Actually, I take that back. I think Kawhi is extremely passive, and Paul George is probably too assertive for what he ends up being in crunch time most times. So I think it's going to be a really rude awakening for him there. And you know, it actually, you know, you talk about what's he going to be there? How's he going to fit? It kind of harkens back to the conversation, again, I'm going cross sport on you, that we had about Josh Allen on the weekend. It's like, yeah, in a perfect world, Serge is amazing. And I think he's going to be an effective player for the Clippers. But when you don't have the kind of trust and the institutional belief in what's around you, why shouldn't you take the shot? Why shouldn't you force things offensively if that's what's happening? Like, and again, if it's Kawhi he's looking at, yeah, he's probably going to give it up. If it's Paul George, he probably is. But I don't know that it gets much further past that, and I just wonder how the kind of pecking order slides in on that team. So from a Schadenfreude standpoint, I feel like it could blow up there. And I want to be clear, blow up. They're still going to make it to at least the second round of the playoffs, likely a conference final. But I feel like when it ends, it's going to end ugly and with tons of fingers pointing at each other for the Clippers.
For sure. And I think there's no doubt about that. But I really, even as it's constituted right now, you know, you look at it, if the Clippers were able to get to the conference finals, which would be the first time in the history of their franchise, you know, I don't think there's any chance that they beat the Lakers, do you? Like, I don't picture a world where they're good enough to beat the Lakers. So that there's that. And look, the Raptors, I think it's like I said to you before, it's a tough pill to swallow just because of how beloved those two guys were. And, you know, going from having Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol as your center position into potentially a rotation of Aron Baynes, Alex Len, and Chris Boucher is going to be a steep drop off on the court as well. So I think, you know, I'm happy that the Raptors were able to sort of salvage the situation with their center depth, because when both of them left, it looked like it was a bit of a panic mode in terms of what the hell are we going to do here? What's going to happen? But they were able to sort of, you know, get some serviceable guys. But there was times last year, Gunner, where, you know, Serge Ibaka was the whole offense. Like, there was many times over the course of the season and even into the playoffs where, you know, they brought him in and that sort of pick and pop with Kyle Lowry and that sort of, you know, find him in the elbow jumper, hit him for a big three. That was an extremely important part of the Toronto Raptors offense. So I think they're going to miss him big time on the court. And the guys that they brought in here are definitely serviceable, but they're not Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. So I think that drop off is definitely going to be enough to sort of make the Raptors drop off in terms of where they end up. But here's the thing with the Raptors. They've exceeded expectations every year for the past however many years, so I'm not going to put it past them. I still think this is obviously a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. Like, this is still, there's still a potential that there could be a top four seed in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. I just don't necessarily think that they have the potential to go to the finals like they have in the past couple years.
No, I think that's exactly it. I think kind of like very loose sketching of the pecking order is some version of the Celtics, of the Sixers. And then I have to be honest, I think you can make a case, and I know that this team was just in the NBA Finals, but I think there's a world where the Raptors are just as good as the Heat are next year. And, you know, maybe you believe in Jimmy Butler and Bam a little more than what's going on here, but I think that things are kind of close enough there. I mean, I think that's going to kind of be the prove what you have for Giannis all season long between those two teams, because we know the Heat have been linked to him as well. You talk about the what Serge kind of meant offensively and just how thin that center position was. Like, think back to that series against the Celtics. It was like, is Daniel Theis or whatever his name is, prime Hakeem Olajuwon? Is he prime Patrick Ewing? He was so dominant, and he just did whatever he wanted. So the idea that you lose kind of your two starting bigs and all that, and I know, again, Slim Duck's going to have more of a role this year. We'll see how that goes, to be perfectly honest. And then, yeah, you mentioned Alex Len. I wrote in my notes here, at least he's tall, so he has that going for him. But having said all that, I'm ready to talk myself into Aaron Baines, honestly. I don't think he's going to replace Serge, but he does similar enough things. He can run around. He can be athletic. He can seal guys off. He's not the defender that Serge is, but he can shoot it. You know, you talk about that pick and pop game. You know, Baines has that in his repertoire. So I think the idea that, you know, it's a not perfect solution. In a perfect world, you have Serge back at the 1 year, $12 million, of course. But I think in terms of kind of what was out there, I know people were kind of clamoring for Hassan Whiteside, maybe. It's like, you know what? I have to be honest. I like the idea of Baines because, you know, similarly to what we talked about with the Clippers, there's not the natural kind of fit. There's not with Serge there of where does he go in the pecking order. There's no quibble about where Aaron Baines goes in the pecking order, and it's where Kyle Lowry tells him to go. And I think he understands that, and he's going to fit well with this team. He's not going to replace what Serge brought, but I'm ready to talk myself into him, and that's only 2% because of that ridiculous hype video that was going around on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say that big reason for that, admit it to yourself, Gunner, is Aaron Baines' fan account, right? That's that's an absolutely incredible account that I just can't get enough of. I followed it instantly. They've sent out a few really great tweets, just hype video. So, I do like having a guy on the Raptors, you know, that's kind of gritty. Is he the first Australian in Raptors history? I feel like he must be. I can't think of another one that's been on the Raptors, so I would just put you on the spot with that. But this guy sets hard screens. He's got a bit of a snarl to him. He's not afraid to get dirty. So he kind of maybe replaces that bit of Serge edge, at least. And I do like having a gritty Australian on the team. So from that perspective, and he can shoot the three a little bit. So they can find him in the corner. Maybe he can shoot it. He's got the bad haircut, though, so maybe he can change that up. I don't know if he's still rocking that onion bun and the beard look, but I could come or go with that look. But yeah, Aaron Baines, I think, will be a serviceable guy. And you know what? I really think there's potential for him to sort of be a fan favorite in Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
I honestly do. Like, every time you've seen him play against the Raptors. I mean, I specifically remember him on the Celtics against the Raptors a lot. And he was playing that kind of nitty-gritty game that Toronto fans love. I can definitely picture him being a bit of a fan favorite. So, good job by the Raptors figuring out that they weren't going to get their two centers back and kind of pivoting here and doing a replaceable sort of, you know, getting a like decent fill-ins and then not hamstringing yourself for the flexibility next offseason. And I guess we'll talk. I can quickly touch on that now, Gunner. But I'm starting to wonder here. There's smoke, there's fire. I don't really see a world in which, you know, all the Raptors fans that talk about this are completely out to lunch here. Like, how bad have the Bucks screwed up this offseason? I mean, it's just been a terrible looking offseason for them. I can't really picture it going much worse for them. And, you know, we all thought that there was going to be this announcement of the Greek freak, Giannis. Yeah, good. Words in my mouth that I'm trying to speak here. Of Giannis's extension that was supposed to be coming up here. And that hasn't happened yet. And, you know, I would not be particularly excited if I was a Bucks fan. You know, I think in my heart of hearts, gun to my head, I think Giannis does re-sign there. I really do. But, you know, the fact that it hasn't happened yet, they sure did trade a lot of assets for Jrue Holiday. And, you know, they lose out on Bogdanović here. And it's just not going great for the Bucks. And the Raptors doing all this stuff. And the Masai connection with Giannis. I'm a little bit more interested. My spidey senses are tingling a little more than they have been in the past right now as I sit here on November 23rd. I really do. I'm starting to think that there is a touch of a possibility that there is something that could happen in the next year's offseason. Unless it happens, hey, maybe Giannis signs tonight. I don't know. But I just really think that there's starting to be a little bit of a chance here, Gunner.
I said I wanted Fred VanVleet to sign while I'm on the air. I want no parts of that. That announcement better happen as far away from this show as humanly possible if there's a Giannis extension in Milwaukee. I honestly think when it comes to me, the most damning thing this offseason, look, I mean, you want to swing for the fences and you want to show him that you're trying to win and, okay, go get Jrue Holiday and, you know, get yourself in tampering hot water with Bogdanovich. Okay, I don't like those moves, but I actually understand them. I think the most damning part is what happened with Pat Connaughton, and I don't know if you noticed this. They had the 1-1. It was going to be a player option, and then somebody in the office was like, "Oh, he's not allowed to sign that deal because of how long he's been in the league and how long we've had his rights for." So they had to go back, hat in hand, renegotiate the deal, pay him a little more money, add an extra year. And again, I'll go cross sport on you. Where my mind immediately went with this was the whole Jay Feaster, Ryan O'Reilly offer sheet. Yeah, I know. We're the same guy. Of course, that's where my mind went. But it's like, if you're signing up.
I knew that's what you're going to say.
If you're signing up to have faith that this is the group that can build a team around you, and it's one thing to make a bad basketball decision. Okay, we thought this player would work. They didn't work. Okay, that's just like there is variables that you cannot take into account. There's no variables with the contract rules in the NBA, with the CBA, and the fact that your team did not know how to fix that or how to attack it properly. It's just really damning to me. Like, why should you have faith? And again, this is the second front office that Giannis has been there for now. And that's the damning part to me, that it's just, I don't know if it's a carelessness or a cluelessness, but either one of those should be a massive red flag to me. And I think that is almost a bigger reason why he would not come back than the ownership or what's been put around him up to this point.
Definitely. And that's beautifully said, Gunner. So, just to put a bow on it before we get to Joseph here on our thoughts, get his thoughts on it. I'm thrilled that they were able to retain Fred. I really think that that's a beautiful sort of message to send to people like around the league. You know, like, this guy was an undrafted guy. They developed him and they paid him. That's something that's a really sort of admirable thing to do. And I think it's sort of a message that they sent to the rest of the league. Thrilled they were able to do it. Really happy that Fred's back. I texted you when it happened, how relieved I was, and I wasn't expecting to feel like that. When I saw that Shams tweet, or whoever tweeted it first, that, you know, Fred VanVleet was back in the fold, I was extremely happy and relieved, and I wasn't expecting to feel like that. And then on the big side of it, I'm really upset to see Serge Ibaka go. Broke my heart, Serge. I was a big fan of yours. You know, I'm not going to say I'm not a big fan of you anymore, but going to the Clippers with Kawhi is a tough look for me. Like, I'll always respect you as a Raptors legend or whatever, but that's a tough look. And Mark, I thought you were done, so I can't really say much about that. So, you know, enjoy yourself in LA. But we'll get into it more with Joseph, but I just wanted to get those kind of bows before we headed off.
Well said. I think we both agree. We would give the Serge Ibaka move a big Serge Ibaka thumbs down. After a block, we just don't like
100%,
it. 100%. See what Joseph Cachero of the score thinks when we continue here on Sportsnet tonight. Joyous edition of Sportsnet tonight. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. And really, it's one name, three initials. Fred VanVleet back with the Raptors. Fired up to talk about it with our next guest, Joseph Cachero, senior writer at The Score. Joseph, thanks for taking some time tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So we'll just jump right into it. Just kind of your quick takeaways on the Fred VanVleet extension, the next Kyle Lowry, if you will.
I was gonna say Kyle Lowry Jr. Right, the guy who's learning from the master. But no, I think it was great for the Raptors. I know a lot of people are sad to see Serge and Mark go, but the priority for this team this offseason was re-signing and retaining Fred VanVleet, and they did that. And, you know, even the contract is sizable, but honestly, it's very fair market value for Fred VanVleet. You know, it's the Malcolm Brogdon contract from last year, and I think Fred VanVleet's at least a little bit better than Malcolm Brogdon. I think it was a good deal for both sides, and yeah, just Fred, you know, for at least one more year, continues to learn beside Kyle Lowry in the backcourt, and then who knows after that, it might be his team in the backcourt.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's a great point about the market value stuff because, you know, Joseph, there's guys getting big money that, like, I'm a diehard sports fan that I had like barely heard of that were getting massive money. So it's hard to quibble about that Fred VanVleet money. But I wanted to circle back to Serge that you mentioned there. And you know, I was kind of heartbroken when I heard that he was leaving the Raptors. I have to be honest with you. And you know, to go to the Clippers, it kind of hurt. And I've kind of been thinking about it a lot. I just wanted to get your take. Like, how do you think Raptors fans should feel about Serge Ibaka leaving for the Clippers? Like, do you think, they think that there should be some ill will for it? Or what do you think they should feel about it?
No, definitely not ill will. I mean, at the end of the day, he was a free agent. You know, this isn't a guy who demanded a trade halfway through his contract or whatever the case may be when fans are upset. You know, this is a guy who, honestly, he arrived in Toronto as a veteran already, who everyone assumed his best years were behind him. And it kind of looked like that at first. But, you know, at the end of the day, Serge got better over his time in Toronto. And I think it was a good partnership for both sides. The Raptors player development system seemed to help him. He developed his game. He expanded his game here. He helped the Raptors in a lot of ways. You know, like, I hope his contributions to the championship quest here don't go unnoticed or, you know, aren't forgotten. He had some big moments in that run, and you know, his acquisition was one of those steps they took over the years to becoming a championship team. And he genuinely loved this city. He really appreciated the cosmopolitan feel of it, the diversity of it. He was a good guy through and through, and at the end of the day, he made a business decision that he thought was best for himself. And you know, he's going to another contender. And yeah, does it hurt a little more if you're a Raptors fan because he goes to Kawhi Leonard's team? Sure. But at the end of the day, he was a good Toronto sports figure who made a decision that was good for him and thanked the city really graciously on his way out too.
So the question, I guess we were kicking this around in the first segment before he hopped on with us. And how do you think he's going to translate out of the Raptors system over to the Clippers system? That's, you know, here it's sort of built on the chemistry and the sort of culture. And over there, it's a little, I'd say it's a little different than that, Joseph. You know, the last year, I wouldn't say it was the most chemistry-filled sort of season for them. How do you think he's going to sort of translate into that system?
I think he'll be fine, and I think Kawhi will probably welcome him with open arms, right? It's a familiar face with Kawhi. Maybe that helps the chemistry a little bit. Teammates in general seem to love Serge wherever he goes. But the one thing I'll say is I'm not completely convinced he addresses all their needs. He's still a decent rim protector. You know, he's a good stretch big who can shoot and who's got range with his shot. But, you know, he's not as mobile a defender as maybe he once was. I'm just not sure he checks all the boxes that maybe the Clippers think he's checking. And the one thing I'll say as well, you know, I mentioned the way Serge's game expanded in Toronto, which full credit to him. But let's not forget how much playing with Kyle Lowry helped Serge Ibaka. You know, like Serge became one of the more automatic pick and pop guys in the league. Well, the passes were coming from Kyle Lowry. There are few guys in the league, and certainly no one on the Clippers, who will drop a pocket pass the way Kyle Lowry will on the pick and roll or the pick and pop. So, you know, I think Serge will be fine, and I think he'll help the Clippers, but I'm not sure he addresses all the needs they think he does, and I think his production will tail off a little bit without Kyle Lowry setting the table for him.
I think that's a very good point. And yeah, Lowry really helped him cook. And yeah, you mentioned that pick and pop. It wasn't the focal point of the Raptors offense, but it did at times feel like last year, the kind of break glass in case of emergency. It's like, okay, nothing's working. Everything's stuck in the mud. Pascal's having a tough night. Kyle's shot's not falling. Well, you can go to that pick and pop and just kind of steal a couple points to keep you in the game. And it certainly felt that way. The one thing I do wonder about what they're kind of, and again, just kind of bring it back a little bit to the Clippers and Serge for a second. How much of the addition there do you think is about them trying to import some of that culture? I mean, I'd argue behind Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, as far as a player goes, I don't know that anyone was more important to the culture here than Serge. It felt like he definitely helped set some of that. And, you know, it's such a buzzword in the NBA. How much of, you know, if you're kind of doing the what percentage was what, how much was it on court that the Clippers are looking to add with Serge versus what they're getting off the court and what he brings to a team?
You know, maybe 75-25. I think it's a valid point. You know, 25% of it probably is the off-court culture stuff. And again, the familiar face for Kawhi. And yeah, I think it's fair to say that they are trying to import the culture the Raptors have. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the Raptors have built that culture over a period of time. And it starts at the top with Masai Ujiri. And quite frankly, the Clippers do not have that culture. They just don't. And Kawhi and Paul George didn't change that. Now, are they still incredibly talented. Are they capable of winning a title? Absolutely. But this notion that, you know, you can just import guys from one system and just translate the culture, it doesn't work like that. And again, I don't want to make it too much about Kyle Lowry here, but I will say again that not only Serge's game, but so much of what the Raptors do on the court and the culture that they have cultivated in Toronto really does begin and end with the engine that is Kyle Lowry and everything he's about. And so, you know, when Kawhi Leonard talked earlier this offseason, where the report came out that Kawhi Leonard wanted a point guard, I don't think it's that hard to imagine who he wanted or who his dream point guard probably would have been. But I don't think the Raptors are letting him go. Not this year, anyway.
Yeah, Joseph, you know, I was talking about Serge leaving for the Clippers, and it broke my heart. I can't see Kyle go to the Clippers, too. I don't think that would be good for my heart. But so you were mentioning what Kyle Lowry can, what he did for Serge Ibaka over his career with the Raptors. So the Raptors bring in a couple new centers, obviously, in Aron Baynes and Alex Len here. And do you think that he's going to sort of, you know, elevate these guys into being somewhat of a, you know, Serge and not replacement, but sort of Serge model here? Or do you think that these two guys are not going to be, you know, able to kind of fill in that role? What do you think they're going to look like as Raptors with Kyle, alongside Kyle Lowry?
You know, I'm really excited to see what Baynes brings to the table. And I realize that's kind of a weird statement because I don't know how many people
look at Aron. Not to us.
Yeah.
Not to the Aron Baynes fan account.
Not many people look at Aron Baynes other than that crazy fan account on Twitter.
Yes.
You're right. But not many people look at him and think he's going to be the most exciting player when they watch the way he plays. But there are some things he does well that I am excited about watching. For one, the guy's an excellent rebounder, and one of the weaknesses of the Raptors last year that maybe didn't get the attention it deserved was that if you go by rebound rates, which is the more accurate way to look at rebounding, the percentage of rebounding opportunities they actually collected, they were bottom nine on both ends of the court, offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding. Aron Baynes is a better rebounder than both Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. He's one of the best rate rebounders in the league. He is an incredible screener. The guy sets thunderous screens. And, you know, there are little things along the margins that can improve a team that won't show up in the box score. And, you know, does Aron Baynes get Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet or Pascal Siakam or whoever the ball handler is, does he get them free one or two extra times a game? Is there a more open look because he's the one setting the screen? He also shot about 35%, about league average, on four attempts per game from three last year, which was a new wrinkle to his game. You know, if he's setting thunderous screens and popping maybe sometimes instead of rolling the way Serge did, then, you know, there's some open shots for him there with one of Lowry or Fred. So I think there are things he can do even on the offensive end, on the glass, that people will be excited about. And then on the defensive end, he's just a really solid center. He's a more mobile guy than people would assume based on his size. Yeah, I think he doesn't necessarily do anything exceptionally well, I guess, other than screening and rebounding, but he does everything well enough that I think he will be a solid placeholder for the next year until the Raptors figure out what's going on with the cap space next year.
Well, I mean, I was already talked into it, but if I wasn't, sets hard screens, can shoot it a little bit, has a bit of a weird haircut, and loves to rebound. I don't know. Sounds like a fan favorite to me. It feels like it's all kind of suiting up perfectly. Now, one guy we haven't talked about in the kind of big man rotation, and I do think some people think he got a payday maybe a little bigger than they were expecting, but I guess that's the price of flexibility for next summer. Chris Boucher, I mean, I don't think there's any Canadian basketball fan who doesn't find themselves, you know, smiling at what a great story it is, you know, the trials and tribulations he had growing up, bouncing around, trying to sniff the league, and all of a sudden he's got a big payday. What do you think his role is? Obviously, we've seen him kind of have moments at times, but it's always kind of been an extra as opposed to a necessity. And this year it feels like it might be more of a necessity. So how do you think he kind of fits in with a maybe more expanded role?
Well, look, I think his first three seasons in the league, he's averaged 11 minutes per game. I think that's going up this year for sure. And I think, you know, there's a scenario where he could even end up starting if things go well enough. I think he backs up Baynes or maybe shares the backup minutes with Alex Len. Maybe they play together in the front court. And I do think, you know, there's still a lot of opportunity for him and there's a lot of potential there. I also think, though, he's going to be a little more of a consistent player, probably become a little smarter on both ends. Maybe sharing the court more with guys like Kyle and Fred will help in that regard. But I think the fact that they also brought in Alex Len is good because, you know, Boucher will get the chance to showcase his skills a little more this year, but he's also not just going to be handed anything. You know, the presence of both Baynes and Len means Boucher still has to earn his minutes, and I think that's a good way to go.
Yeah.
So obviously, I mentioned the flexibility there with the second-year player option. That, of course, leads us to next summer. And, you know, speaking of long-limbed gentlemen like Chris Boucher, there's a guy with much longer limbs living in Milwaukee right now. How much are you buying into the smoke around the possibility? You know, there's no extension yet. Obviously, you know, the Raptors have forever been linked to him. But it feels like, you know, when you couple the fact that they were only willing to go 1 year with Serge and then Fred helped them out with the salary for next year, it really feels like this is more than just fans making noise about the possibility of them taking a serious run at Giannis, presuming he's there next summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, there's been, you know, even outside of the fans and the rumor mongering, there have been credible reports for a while that the Raptors will at the very least be one of the teams in the mix should Giannis eventually get to free agency, you know, between Toronto, Miami, maybe Dallas. I know at one point the Warriors in a sign trade possibility were seen as kind of a pie in the sky situation. But I definitely think if Giannis gets to free agency, the Raptors will be in the mix. They'll have one of the best cases to present to him. And I think that's why very plainly the Raptors were preserving that 2021 cap space. It's you know, almost the reason for sure that Serge isn't back, because they weren't going to give him a long-term deal. You know, and it's probably why they have to overpay a little bit for a guy like Boucher to come back, because that second year is non-guaranteed, right? So maybe they give him a little more money this year than another team would have given him, but he's also got no guarantee to get paid by the Raptors next year. I think every step of the way and every move the Raptors have made, just like Miami, just like Dallas, it's going to be with 2021 on their minds. And it doesn't mean they're not trying to compete this year. I mean, they're still going to field a lineup that can very much compete with the best teams in the East. But if Giannis makes it to free agency, that's the priority. And we'll see what happens. I mean, some people think he's going to sign the Supermax in the next week or so. We'll have to see. But if he gets to free agency, yeah, it's the Raptors will 100% be one of the teams in the mix.
So last one for me, Joseph. You just kind of touched on it there, but maybe get a little deep into it. What do you think the ceiling on this team is now as it's constructed?
I mean, ceiling, if we're talking ceiling, you know, like the absolute highest thing, you know, I still think a finals run isn't completely off the table. Is it likely? No. You know, if Brooklyn's healthy, it's going to be hard to beat a team with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Assuming everything goes all right for the Bucks, they still have the two-time reigning MVP, and they'll be better on paper than the Raptors. Boston already beat them in a playoff series, but also lost Hayward. I think the finals is maybe a bit of a long shot, but that is their ceiling to me. The realistic situation is probably like last year, you know, I don't know, finish somewhere between 2-4, 2-5 and fight to get into the second round again, maybe make the conference finals. But yeah, they'll be competing with the top teams in the East again. And I think it'll be a very predictable next month or so. A lot of people are going to predict this team to finish like 7th or something, or some clowns might even pick them to miss the playoffs because they don't pay attention. And then halfway through the year, when this team is like top 3 in the East, everyone's going to be writing features and making videos about how they can't believe this surprising run the Raptors have gone on, as if they haven't seen Kyle Lowry do this before. They haven't seen Nick Nurse do this before. Like, it is what it is. But I see this team competing in the East again, and much to the surprise of a lot of people.
So having said all that, if this is a team that, and I don't disagree with you, that pie in the sky, this could be a team that makes a run to the finals. Is it smart to, and you know, we don't know. Who knows if Serge would have been back on a 2-year deal? Maybe he always wanted to end up in LA, but is it smart to kind of punt on fielding the best lineup you could possibly have this year for the hope at Giannis? I mean, we all know what a game changer he would be, but you know, you only get so many cracks at having potentially, you know, fringy championship teams even in this league. Do you think it's smart to have kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, punted on not the season, but on fielding the best possible team you could this year for the hope and a prayer of next summer?
I think the potential reward in this case is very much worth the risk, especially because, again, it's not like they completely punted on things. They still are going to field a lineup that can compete with most anybody in the NBA. Now, if you were asking me, you know, if they had lost Fred because they had all of their eggs in the basket of 2021, I'd say it was a bad way to do business. But, you know, with all due respect to Serge, going from Serge or Marc Gasol to Aaron Baines, or vice versa, you know, keeping those guys as opposed to getting Aaron Baines isn't moving the needle enough for me, and isn't the difference enough between being a contender or not to rid yourself of the space necessary to potentially land a franchise changer.
Well said. I tend to agree. Thoroughly enjoyed the chat tonight, Joseph. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There he goes, Joseph Cachero, senior writer at The Score. Always love getting senior writers on. You know, we're more junior radio hosts, so it's very nice to have someone with the gravitas of a senior writer.
Yeah,
an adult, definitely.
Nice.
Yeah. Speaking of adults, we're going to have one a little later on in the program. Somebody from the very number-friendly website, 538, Ty Shalter. He'll join us at the top of the hour at 8 o'clock to discuss everything in the NFL. Obviously, plenty to get into there. But, yeah, I thought that was an interesting kind of point I tried to pick apart with Joseph. Where are you at on the idea of, you know, is it worth it? Kind of, you know, and again, we don't know. This is all presuming Surge would have loved to be back. I think based on the Instagram post and everything we saw from him, he would have. But, you know, is it worth the crack at Giannis to kind of lose out on having the best possible team you could have had this year to you, McKee?
It's a good question. That's a good question. That's why they pay you the medium bucks, buddy. But I don't know. I think, you know, if they really, really think they have a shot at it, I think that's why they do it. And it comes back to the easiest thing to say in all of Toronto sports. Just trust Masai, man. Masai knows things. Masai knows all. You know, Bobby Webster definitely gets thrown under the rug when we talk about this. But, I mean, he is a budding star in himself in terms of being a GM in the NBA. So I completely – like, it's a great feeling as a sports fan having complete and utter trust in your whole franchise's front office and coaching staff. And I have full and total trust in Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri. And if they think that it's worth it to not punt on this season, but maybe get rid of your finals aspirations, but still be a solid team, still maybe potentially make the second round of the playoffs in order to maybe have a shot at Giannis because they think that, then do it because I trust you guys. So I'm copping out on that answer and just saying that I put full trust in Bobby and Masai and I'm good with it because they are.
That's not a cop-out. That's actually the right answer. And we got to start getting Bobby Webster a little more shine because I remember being at the parade and he rolled through and there was, you know, some cheers of, hey, it's Bobby, and a lot of who's that? And I have to say more people recognized Alex McKechnie. Now, that was after the July season when he did get a ton of TV time. I was definitely living it up, giving it up for Alex McKechnie there. So you talk about having complete faith. Yeah, what a legend. Hey, he got a bump after that. He deserved it, man. Whatever he did to Kawhi, we all know it certainly worked out. So you talk about having complete faith, complete trust in Masai, in Bobby Webster. I got to be honest, turning to the NFL, there's one team that I've got some questions about their leadership. I'll explain who that is when we continue next on Sportsnet tonight. NFL season continued to truck along this weekend. I should probably let you know, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me, Sportsnet tonight. We have been talking a lot about the Raptors, please. There's tons to chew on there. Did they do the right thing? Letting Serge walk, potentially. How happy are you have to have Fred back? And maybe most importantly, just how much are you letting yourself believe about Giannis next year? Text line's always open, 590-590. Please include your name and location. Also, somebody told me I was complaining about using my back hurting from the snow. He told me it's still light enough. Just get the power washer out, which I liked. A little brazen, I got to say. Feels like it could have some ice ramifications there. But I am a big, big fan of somebody who says, don't work hard, work smart. So I like that on the text line.
Power wash?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know that I agree with it, but I respect the – look, you want to get outside the box. You want a little different thinking. I do remember there being a news story a couple of years ago where a guy took a flamethrower to his driveway because he was
– oh, my God.
And it's like, that's too much. So, I don't know, maybe find the sweet spot in there between using water to clean snow and using a military-grade flamethrower. So somewhere in the middle there. If you have any ideas, again, hit us up on the text line, 590-590. Please include your name and location. But we were talking about all the faith we have in Masai, and hey, why wouldn't you? He has done pretty much everything right every single step of the way with this franchise, but that got me thinking about something in the NFL this weekend, and a team, I got to be honest, have some questions about the motivational tactics. Now, I don't know if you saw this story, you know, former Packers head coach, current Cowboys head coach, and Super Bowl champ, so he must know what he's doing. Mike McCarthy was, and I'm reading the story here, he needed to find a way to motivate his team coming into the game with the Vikings. So what did he do? He showed up to Saturday's team meeting with a sledgehammer and a crate of watermelons. Yes. He went full Gallagher on his team, just smashing watermelons, trying to motivate them. Now, I had a lot of questions about this, but then I saw this a little later on. And, you know, me and you have talked ad nauseum, and we will talk later on tonight, about the lack of hate in the sports world among teams competing. I'm all in on this now from Mike McCarthy. The last watermelon he smashed or was about to smash had Dalvin Cook's face on it. And then DeMarcus Lawrence jumped up and said, no, 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 that one's mine. So I was all the way out on this idea until I saw that part. And now I'm like, this is great. Mike McCarthy, genius leader of men. I'm all the way back in.
Okay, so I love it. I love – this is a classic football guy move, just yeah. Like weird, stupid things that they do to try to motivate the boys and get them going. But the thing that, like, you know, you got to try anything here. They're – like, they got – what are they, a half game out of first place? Like, they're right in the race. And the NFL, they got – they're 3-7. If they win two games in a row here, you know, they could move into first place. So you got to still motivate. You can't just sit on your laurels. So I absolutely love this from Mike McCarthy. I think it's a great move. Smashing watermelons wouldn't be the first thing that I would expect him to do, but, you know, you're reaching deep into the bag of tricks, Connor, when you're, you know, when your back's up against the wall. And, hey, it worked. They won. So there you go. They beat the Vikings yesterday. So that's good for him. Good for old Mikey.
And this reminds me of a little Toronto connection there. I don't think they brought in a hammer to pound it, but Dwayne Casey had them put that massive boulder right outside of the rock.
Oh, yeah.
Got to pound that rock, baby, every day. So, look, I'm right there with you. It's like it's a twofold. I love that McCarthy is trying something, anything, but it's an all-time, like, oh, boy, we're getting desperate here. It definitely reeks of we got to find a way to turn something around here because it's been a tire fire in Dallas.
Well, yeah, but like I said, man, they're one game. They could win two in a row and be leading that division, so I understand why he's still trying to motivate them. That division, we'll get into it with Ty, but, man, let's just say that I have a little bit of fantasy implications with the Cleveland Browns, and I have Jarvis Landry on my fantasy team, and I'm really fighting in the fan league. I'm kind of lost a few in a row here. So I watched an insane amount, a way too much of that Eagles-Browns game yesterday. That might be the worst football game ever played. It was so bad, and a big reason of that is because of Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is, I'd say, 1 or 2 years from being out of the league. He is so unbelievably bad. I don't know what happened to that guy. That guy was playing at an MVP level until he tore his ACL in 2018 was out when they went on to win the Super Bowl. So, man, I don't know what you do with the Eagles there. I don't know who's going to win that division. Honestly, if I had to guess who's going to win that division, I would probably say the Dallas Cowboys, because I think, you know, with Andy Dalton, all the weapons they have around there, he's at least somewhat capable, and I think they can win a couple in a row. But I have no idea who's going to win it. But I'm at the point where I think that Andy Dalton is a better quarterback than Carson Wentz. Like, if I had one game to win tomorrow, I might take Andy Dalton over Carson Wentz, which is an insane sentence to say. But, man, what a tire fire. That game yesterday, Eagles-Browns, worst game ever. I don't know how Andy McNamara does it every week, but, yeah, what a terrible game. What a terrible division.
Well, so you talk about Eagles-Browns, and that gives me PTSD because I don't think it was the Eagles involved, but it was definitely the Browns, and a good buddy of ours, you hear him on the station every day, you're producing a show this week, J.D. Bunkus, I remember, was the first Sunday of a football season, you know, back when you could, like, hang out with people inside their houses and stuff. We had all the parlay tickets ready to go, and he was all in on betting this Browns game. And it was the first Sunday of the football season. I'm so excited to bounce around, catch a little bit of everything. And he's like, I think we should chase bet the Browns. So this is why we have to keep it locked on Browns. So you watch Browns Eagles. I can't do it. I have PTSD from that one terrible Sunday that I spent with our buddy JD there a couple of football Sundays ago. Obviously, lots to get into there. And yeah, we will do it next with Ty Schalter, 538 when we continue. Just getting rolling. First hour in the books here on Sportsnet tonight. Always always plenty to get into here on a Monday, coming off another tremendous NFL Sunday. Monday Nighter's going to get going shortly, and we were kicking around a Tom Brady theory that we might get into depending on how he looks tonight. But joining us now to discuss what's already happened this week in the NFL, writer 538 Ty Schalter joining us now. Ty, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys?
Thrilled. Well, actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm a little dejected. One of my favorite guys to watch this year in the league, I'm sure he's been many a people's favorite guy, Joe Burrow. And, you know, we knew he was banged up. That looked ugly early. And then it seems like every 6 hours, there's been another part of his knee that is now structurally damaged. I have to be honest. I do wonder, given, you know, obviously the severity of the injury, but also, you know, he is a little bit older than the kind of crop of young quarterbacks we think of. Do you worry at all that this will kind of affect his long-term ability, you know, to be the elite quarterback he looked like he was on track to become?
Obviously, anytime you're dealing with a knee like this, and like you said, there's multiple pieces and parts, multiple therapies, multiple rehabs that have to go on. It's a lot of healing. We've seen plenty of guys come back from stuff like this. You know, Adrian Peterson comes to mind. But and a quarterback, you know, of course, some of his athleticism and mobility is some of what helps him out. But this isn't Pat Mahomes. This isn't a Lamar Jackson. This isn't the guy who relies on, you know, that speed or picking up yards with his legs the same kind of way. You know, after going out and seeing Dan Marino shred people in a, you know, air cast when I was a little kid, it's like, you know, the amount of mobility you need as a quarterback is not as high as in other positions. And I think he's going to be okay. But certainly mentally, you know, it's going to be tight on that rehab schedule. We don't know what off season looks like. How much is he going to be able to be in the building for therapy, for OTAs, you know, the full off season you expect to have as a quarterback. And you know, when you're a young quarterback and you're trying to develop, you want every second in that room, every second with your receivers, every second with your offensive coordinator that you can get. So it's bad for his immediate development. But obviously he's a smart, intense kid, you know, takes the game very seriously and has a good head on his shoulders from all we can see. So I think he's going to be fine long term.
Well said. Obviously, if we're going to talk about young crop of quarterbacks, I think the other pretty interesting storyline to come out of yesterday is Tua getting benched in Miami. I mean, that's a relatively quick hook. They just went to him not all that long ago. It sounds like he may be, like, it's up in the air what'll happen next week. Or actually, it does seem like the Dolphins are ready to go back to him. On one hand, I got to hand it to Brian Flores. That can't be an easy call to make. But on the other hand, I don't know what that does to the confidence of somebody who's so important to your franchise going forward.
Yeah, I think the weirder call was taking him out to begin with. Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing very well coming out of, you know, going into that bye week. They certainly looked like they were a team that were putting things together. Offense was putting things together. And I understand, you know, you spent a long time with that kid number one on your list. You went out and you got him, and you want to build your franchise around him. You're excited to see what he can do. But you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing well. He came in, played more well, and I think they showed that they can win with Tua under center. But if you've got better quarterback standing right there, a veteran guy who can, you know, I mean, he's, you talk about ups and downs. He's seen it all, been everywhere in the league. He's done it all. So I think you leave him out there and let him take those lumps. Fitzpatrick. So it was kind of weird to throw Tua out there and go, yeah, we think we can get it done with him out there. And then as soon as you hit a spot where you realize, ah, actually, he may not be the best guy we've got on the bench to win right now, pull him back out. So I think the yo-yoing, the taking in and out, is not what you want to see for a young quarterback's development. But again, Tua's been around a long time. He's overcome a lot more adversity than this, and he's got a bright future ahead of him.
So, Ty, we're talking about natural quarterbacks, and now I want to ask you about a guy who I'm not sure if he's a natural quarterback, but I was actually pretty impressed with yesterday in Taysom Hill. So he started off, I watched most of that game because I was so interested in what was going to happen, obviously, and I think he started off pretty shaky, but by the end of that game, I have to say, like, I think Sean Payton made the right call in going to him. He really, really does give them some versatility there. He's got that ability to kind of run around, do things. Plus, he looked like he had a pretty good arm, had a good connection with Michael Thomas, obviously. So what'd you make of him looking yesterday? I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Sean Payton is the effective term here because he's such a good coach. He's such a great offensive mind. And he knew that. I think he knew he could make at least Taysom Hill look good for one game, right? You know, came in with a game plan scripted for him. This has been his time coming. Payton talked about he felt he owed Hill this opportunity. You know, the org invested at least $16 million, might be up to $20 million in him this season. And you don't make that kind of investment if you don't believe he can be the guy. Do I believe he can be the guy? Is this the start of the Hill era with the Breeze era ending in New Orleans? I'm not so sure. And I think Jameis Winston's probably a better bridge guy to that next guy. But certainly, you know, he got his chance. He made the most he could of it. Again, I'm not convinced he's going to be a plus quarterback in the NFL for, you know, weeks on end, months on end, years on end. But it's a very good first step.
How much of do you think them going to Hill is simply Payton kind of wanting to prove he could? I mean, we've all been having these conversations about this guy for, you know, seemingly several seasons now of what exactly do they have there. And, you know, we know Sean Payton, and I'm not saying this pejoratively, I love this trait in him. He is a cocky guy who wants to prove everybody wrong. And it does kind of feel like part of it is just him wanting to prove that he could, because I tend to agree with you. I think if there's truth serum at play, they know the better long-term guy who gives him a better ceiling this year. If it's not Breeze, I do think it's Winston. How much of it do you think is just Sean Payton kind of wanting to, and again, I like this about him, prove to everyone how smart he is?
Oh, about 98%. Sean Payton, you know, keep in mind, this is the other thing. Right now, this is the hardest part of an NFL franchise is when you have a coach-quarterback combination and either the coach or the quarterback goes, right? How do you get to that next quarterback? How do you hang on as a coach? How do you lay the foundation for that? And this is Sean Payton calling a shot and saying, I told you this kid was going to be the guy, or at least the guy for a little while, at least the guy until he can find the guy. I told you I can scheme this kid up. I told you I can win with this kid. I believe in him. Drew Brees believes in him. We're going to go out there and we're going to show these people this. And I think it comes back to what you said there, is that they know Jameis Winston is the better NFL quarterback right now. And I think, you know, Jameis Winston has more to scared defenses with, especially when you're talking about a team that's a legitimate Super Bowl contender. The defense is playing very, very well. You have one of the best running backs in the league in Kamara. So, you know, Jameis Winston can go out there and add that deep ball, add that other dimension, but you know what you have in him. There's miles of tape on Jameis Winston. You don't know what you have in Hill. And I took some heat on Twitter for this over the weekend because I said this exact thing. You don't know what you have in Hill. One game isn't going to make the difference necessarily. You know, they've swept the Bucs. They're in great position. So I think this is the right call, and I think he proved it out.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go from talking about a team that's looking good to a team that's looking potentially the worst I've ever seen a team look in the Philadelphia Eagles. Because I was telling my co-host here, Gunner, that I had a big eye on that because I'm in a big-time fantasy league, and I'm doing really well. So I put myself through a bad, bad game to watch the Cleveland Browns. To watch the Cleveland Browns and the Philadelphia Eagles. And what I came away with was that, what the hell do the Eagles do with Carson Wentz? Can you answer that question for me, Ty?
Not quickly. here's a guy. He's a talented kid. Obviously he wants to win. The Eagles want him to win. The Eagles want to look good for him winning. You know, right now he's struggling in a very real way, and continuing to throw him out there in one sense, it shows faith. And then in another sense, you know, maybe you're doing more harm than good for him long-term. And this has come back to exactly what I said just a second ago, where you're trying to figure out what that future is. Because when you have that quarterback, that's 10 years that everybody wins. Coach wins, executive wins, owner wins, everybody makes money, everybody's happy. You don't have that quarterback, everybody's one bad game away from losing their job, right? And so I think that's really the concern when you're an NFL head coach is, do I have that quarterback, and can I claim credit for that quarterback's success? So I think they want to be able to prove that their faith in Wentz is right. And I think they want to be able to win with Wentz. But at the end of the day, you got to be winning, you know. And if you put him out there and put him out there and put him out there and it's not happening, and the team's not healthy and it's not working and they're losing games and they can't stay even competitive in the worst division maybe in the modern history of the NFL, then you got to call it. So I think that's right now, him playing out the string is probably not the best thing for his development. And, you know, I don't think Doug Peterson is in any danger, but if you don't have a better plan going into next year and Wentz is the starter again and he doesn't look any better, you got to make that call sooner than that.
Talking to Ty Schlater of 538 here on Sportsnet tonight, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. So you talk about everybody wants to find the quarterback. Everybody wants to kind of claim that guy. And the guy I'm maybe the most confounded about, and I'm sure there's a lot of people like me who have changed their mind 15 times on this guy in the last handful of seasons, it's Derek Carr. I mean, he looked good again last night for the most part against the Chiefs. Obviously, you lose to the Chiefs because Patrick Mahomes is a Superman. I don't think anybody can, kind of slag him for that. But what exactly do you think the Raiders have there? Because there have been times where he looks like, yes, you can absolutely win with this guy, and then there have been times where in my opinion he's looked lost. So where do you kind of stand on him?
Yeah, well, I think what they have is a guy that's going to keep them asking if they've got the guy for as long as they keep him around. And, you know, I don't mean to slag Carr in that way. Like, I don't want to say he's not playing well or that, you know, that you can't win with him. Clearly, they can win with him. They are winning with him. They have won with him. But if it's kind of a one up year, two down years, one up year, two down years with him, you know, and if they have to constantly have all the pieces in place, constantly have all the right weapons on offense, and have, you know, game changers, difference makers on defense, how much better is he than anybody else you can go out and get, right? So I think that is going to kind of continue to be the question. But, hey, you know, John Gruden has never been about give me the superstar quarterback. He's never been about I want a guy who's going to make me look smart. He wants a guy that he looks smart using, right? And you know, he's won with Brad Johnson, and he's won with Rich Gannon, and he likes veterans, and he doesn't like rookies. So I don't think the Raiders are going to be the team that bails on a middle-tier quarterback to try and swing for the fences with a, you know, a first-round prospect or make some kind of big splashy trade. I think they can win with him, and I have disagreed with John Gruden on almost every decision he's made, and they're doing much better than I think anybody expected over the past couple of years. So you have to give credit to him.
This is another question about about the Eagles and their division here. But gun to your head, Ty, who do you think wins that division?
Oh, man. I think the Giants probably have the best overall team talent-wise. I like what Washington is doing. I really like their defense. Alex Smith's shown some flashes, you know, but can they do it consistently? I don't know that they can. I don't think they have the right pieces in place. I mean, none of these teams have the pieces in place, right? But, you know, Daniel Jones gives us a game every week or two. They have enough talent there in New York. And I'm impressed with Joe Judge, as what he's done as a coach, the way he's got those guys playing. I think the Giants probably have the best team this year. Who has the best team next year? You know, that's a big, you know, what does Dak look like? Can Washington keep adding pieces? Does Philly right the ship, get all those guys healthy and add a couple pieces? I don't know. But right now, I gun to my head, I think it's the Giants.
Okay, you seem like a fun guy. I feel like we can joke around with you here. So you talk about Joe Judge. You like what he's doing. Now, I have a question for you when it comes to Mike McCarthy. I don't know if you saw this story. He's smashing watermelons to prove to his team, yeah, you have to do something. I don't really understand the connection. Is that a man in search of any answers and he's desperate, or stable genius? If you can only pick one, which is it?
I'm going to say desperate man in search of answers, because you got to convince him. You've got guys going public in week four, week five. You know, that goes down in about 5 minutes later. You got guys going public to the media. These coaches don't know what they're doing. They're telling us stuff that they don't seem prepared. We don't seem prepared. That's a very bad sign. Now, there's always disgruntled guys in any transition. You know, there's always people that are going to be, you know, loyal to the last coach when a new coach comes in. But I think that's tough. Now, keep in mind, you know, ultimately, football's a meathead sport still, right? These are still, a lot of these guys are very, very smart. But, you know, and a lot of these guys are very professional. But sometimes you put a log in the middle of the room and an axe and go, let's keep chopping wood, boys, and everybody gets into it and it works. It works. You know, until the punter chops his leg off. But the that kind of stuff can work. I don't know if this is going to work. But I don't want to discount entirely the idea that that guy could get behind a motivational slogan about like that.
At least he was smart enough not to bring an axe in the room. Ty, thoroughly enjoyed the chat. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
There he goes. Ty Schalter, writer, 538. McKee, you know, I do want to pick up on something you talked about. And I know, look, fantasy's important. It's the reason we all actually love the NFL. But I got to be honest, shame on you. We were talking on Saturday about how nice it was. And again, we love watching the Bills. We love riding that Josh Allen experience. We were so excited to be able to bounce around, watch whatever we wanted, and you chose to put on a bib, grab a knife and fork, and, well, I guess a spoon with the analogy I'm about to go with, and slurp up some of that Browns-Eagles gruel. I got to be honest. I expected better from you, quite frankly.
Yeah, it was dumb. It was dumb. I live in a multiple screen world. I was checking in on everything, you know. As our boy JD Bunkus likes to call it, I had the no cred zone going. I was watching Red Zone. I had a bunch of different stuff going. So, but I had a heavy eye on Eagles and Browns, and it stunk. It was just bad. So yeah, I know. But I have a big you know, in this Monday night or tonight, I've got some serious fantasy implications going on, and I'm in a dead heat with our old producer Mark Boffo. So we're tied. It's 50-50 on the projection, so it's going to be a battle tonight. So I'm looking forward to beating our boy Mark Boffo.
I think the only bigger battle than that is something we talked about on Saturday, and it's Tom Brady versus his bedtime. He's been really struggling in all these primetime games, and I honestly love a crazy theory, especially if I can have any credence to it whatsoever. So please give me something to drive that narrative either deep into the grave, or let me just like rev that narrative up. I want no middle ground for Brady tonight. I want him either going ham one direction or the other, because I love that theory that it's just past his bedtime. He can't do primetime games.
He's a 1 o'clock guy. Like, you got to be home. You got to be, you know, getting your nightcap on, getting your jams on around 7:30, making your way up to the bedroom. Turning off the light around 9, and you're in bed, you're ready to go. Go get that TB12 diet ready to rock for the next day. So, it's a great game for a bunch of different theories tonight. I love it.
With his and don't forget his pajamas that charge himself to recover better, because he's drinking concussion water and he's wearing sleep pajamas that recharge him. Whatever it takes for Brady at this point, I guess you could say it works. What else has worked, or I hope it does? An all-Canadian division in the NHL. Ooh, give it to me. It looks like we're tracking there. That is, if we ever get a season. We'll talk about that with Luke Fox when we continue on Sportsnet tonight. Sportsnet tonight, Brent Gunning and Sam McKee alongside me. Always love getting to talk to our next guest, mostly because it means I'm going to talk about hockey, but really mostly because it's Luke Fox, and he always, honestly, I have to say, every single week, one of my favorite pieces of the week is something you write, Luke. Very happy to have you on tonight. How you doing?
Oh, wow. Look at the compliments are flowing. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I mean, a little teensy part of it is I see your mailbag, and then I steal questions to ask other people and make them my own. Like a little part of it is you make me smarter. But I got to admit, I love the write up, the latest one. What's going on with the Canadian division in the NFL or NHL, handicapping everything there? I think we all agree Leafs are the favorites, but there has never been more bragging rights on the line than if we get a Canadian division. I know some people have talked about the possibility of maybe that even means divisional playoffs just within Canada. You know, there's always bragging rights on the line whenever the Leafs go just about anywhere, but it feels like this year it could have the potential to get ramped up completely another level.
I think it's going to be amazing for fans if this happens, and it looks like it will, just with the border situation and the NHL wanting to get things moving. in January or maybe early February at the latest. And I just don't see the virus or the politics surrounding the border changing that much by then. So we could be in for this, and it could be like a real fun treat. You know, the Canadian fan bases love to go at each other as is. And I think if they're playing games within Canada, you know, each team playing three or four games a week, lots of back-to-backs, you know, probably, you know, they're going to try and reduce the travel. So, you know, if the Leafs go out west, they'll probably play a bunch of games at once. And I think it's really going to fuel these rivalries and make for some really entertaining hockey and some nice bickering between the fan bases, and the fact that so many of these Canadian teams are loaded with young stars. I mean, we're very familiar with the team here, but the Canucks, you know, had a nice little run, and Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson are only going to get better. You know, you look at Edmonton, and they arguably have the two best players on the planet, and they still have so much to prove. And Winnipeg, you know, they got booted out kind of early, but you look at their roster, and arguably I'd say their top six is right there with Toronto's in terms of firepower. And I just think it could be some really explosive matchups.
Yeah, I think, you know, the sort of the number one storyline is just how good the hockey can be in Canada because of, you know, all the young studs. But I kind of was in a discussion with one of my pals here earlier today. And do you think that the rivalries are felt like on the ice as much as they are with the fans? Like, do you think that these guys that play for these Canadian teams have this sort of hatred towards the other Canadian teams, or is that more of just a fan thing, Luke? What do you think about that?
Might be a little bit more fan when you start crossing east and west. The Toronto Montreal games lately, because they've both been pretty good, have been fantastic. A lot of overtime games, a lot of close games. I've had the privilege of going to the Bell Center for a lot of those Saturday nights, and the electricity in there is definitely ramped up a notch. And then conversely, if you go out west, I think, you know, this year more than any in recent memory since maybe back to the 90s or 80s, is the Battle of Alberta was on fire. So that's been fantastic. Vancouver has good rivalries with both those teams. But as far as, you know, crossing over east and west when they only play each other twice in a normal 82-game season, and sometimes those two matchups, there might be 3 months in between those two. So it's hard to get much of a rivalry going, especially when you don't have that intensity of seeing one team multiple times in a short span. And I think maybe that's where it might be more about fan bases. But what I will say is I've had the privilege of going out to the Leafs West Coast swing a couple times, and there was a lot more electricity in, you know, a Toronto-Vancouver game than there is for, you know, Leafs-Devils. So, you know, I would expect, you know, some intense matchups just, and, you know, they could play these teams 10 times just because if they keep it exclusively in division, if the border doesn't let up, you know, it's just natural. The more you see a guy, the more you probably dislike him, the more times he rams you into the glass, right?
Definitely. And I think we would all, or at least everyone involved in this conversation, would welcome at least just a little more hate back in the regular season. Nothing wrong with that. A little truculence, pugnacity, you know, all Brian Burke's favorite words. You mentioned Leafs Habs, Bell Center, Saturday night. I have to be honest, I have a little bit of PTSD there because last year I wanted to check it off the bucket list, made a birthday trip out there for myself, and the Leafs got pumped 7-2. So that Habs goal song is still blearing in my ears. I don't know. Now, it's funny you mentioned the kind of rivalries don't travel as much kind of east to west. It does feel like that's kind of changed a little bit because I, you know, and again, maybe this is just one of those things where it's burned into my brain more than anybody else's. But I remember that Leafs Oilers game where Nazem Kadri scored the OT winner and he was all over McDavid. And it felt like that was kind of a budding rivalry there. But, you know, I do kind of wonder why that isn't the case. I mean, you look at you look at Matthews, and it feels like that's his natural a kind of rivalry among two elite centers in the game. But it just doesn't feel like they use each other as measuring sticks all that much.
No, well, they're buddies, right? They're training together in Arizona right now, which is kind of interesting. And they come from the same agency. I think their dads hit it off a little bit, just having that in common of being the fathers of, you know, first overall picks and prodigies. I think they relate to each other a lot. I don't think it's like a rivalry the way Sid and Obi is a rivalry where there's a healthy amount of dislike. But what I would say, especially with Connor's trips here into this city, is a lot of teams have a lot of guys that are from Ontario. So I think they have a little extra juice and maybe throw some money on the board for those games, especially the Western teams, because they only come here once a year. So I think the Toronto guys, and you could throw McDavid into that mix, being from Newmarket, they want to show. You know, it's one, they're in their hometown, so there's probably relatives and friends actually in the building. And two, you know, the Leafs are 9 times out of 10, they're playing in prime time, and it's going to get a lot of attention. And when there's that many eyes on you, these guys are world-class athletes. They want to put their best foot forward. Like, I'll never forget that move McDavid pulled on Morgan Rielly. The one time. Like,
he won't either.
Filthy, yeah. Yeah, so, and the other thing is, I think it would serve the Leafs well being in this division, because there's not a lot of heavy grind-em-out teams. Winnipeg's got a little sandpaper to them, but these are mostly young, fast, skilled teams, and I think those are the teams that the Leafs match up best against.
Yeah, that's definitely true, and I'm just so excited for this. And it, you know, because it was like a pie in the sky thing, and then, you know, now it's starting to look more and more like it's actually going to happen. So it's really exciting. But Luke, we got to talk about it. What do you make of this, of Connor McDavid traveling to Arizona to skate with Auston Matthews? Like our Leaf fan, like I saw Leaf's Twitter was let's say warm about this. But what do you make of this, honestly? Because I'm not sure what to make of it.
I'm surprised, honestly, but just because usually guys come to Toronto. But I think maybe just because of the COVID situation, that's kind of what I chalk it up to. But usually guys come here in the off season for their skills training. You know, some of the better skills coaches run clinics here. It's right in his backyard. So I'm a little bit surprised that Elliot reported that, and good on him for getting that scoop. But I wonder if it's just you can get more guys on the ice and you don't have to worry so much about, you know, protocols and stuff in Arizona. That might be my guess. And then they do have the connection in that they're from the same agency. So maybe it works that way. Or maybe part of it is Connor just wanting to use as a measuring stick one of the better guys in the world. It is interesting, and I'm excited to learn more about how that decision came to be and why he went down there. We know that he already has COVID, right? He had it and got it cleared, so maybe he's less worried that he's been through it already.
Didn't know we were allowed to say that. No, just kidding.
The Oilers announced that, right?
Yes, yeah. They did. That's no rules being broken there. It's funny. You talk about, you know, the Leafs Twitter blowing stuff out of proportion. I may, or, you know, talking about jumping to conclusions and getting way too worried about certain things, I may or may not have texted a picture of Auston Matthews to my co-host worrying that his gloves were Boston Bruins colors. He talked me off the ledge that they were likely Arizona State colors. So it's just, you know, we're all blowing stuff out of proportion. But I have to wonder, what do Oilers fans think about this? I mean, I think people roll their eyes at the smoke of, one day McDavid's going to want to come home. But I don't know, man, if I'm placing myself in oil country and the idea of he's yucking it up with the Leafs franchise center, I guess you can make the case, you know, McDavid under contract longer than Matthews is. But I don't know. That would worry me at least a little bit if I'm an Oilers fan.
Oh, man, I love the conspiracy theory. these guys on different teams train together all the time. You know, Dylan Larkin was here one summer training with McDavid. I didn't see any, you know, rumors that McDavid was going to leave for Detroit or Larkin was going to go to Edmonton. I mean, I go to the BioSteel camp under normal circumstances. That would be going right before training camp. And there's guys from all sorts of different teams, you know, yucking it up and having fun and training together. And no, it's, I wouldn't read it too much into that, but I do love the conspiracy theories.
Okay, well, okay. Thank you for kind of talking me off the ledge. Now, I do have to, well, actually, no, wait a minute. I wanted you to ramp me up and tell you there was a lot of smoke there. I take that back. I talked to you about that at the beginning about how much I love all your pieces. And one piece last week that got me oh so fired up was Joe Thornton looking very, very good in Davos. Now, you talk about how fast the league is over there. How much should we kind of read into this? I think we all know the skill levels there, but the fact that he is, at least last I checked, the point per game player in one of the fastest leagues in the world, that has to bode well for what he's going to be whenever the NHL season starts up.
Yeah, it's a positive sign. I talked to, you know, his GM over there for quite a long time, like a good 20-25 minute conversation about how Joe's being used and how he's looking so far. And Rato is his name. He was just raving about the guy. You know, mind you, it's not the NHL, it's not the KHL, but it is the top league in Switzerland, and it is a league that places a premium on speed, and he's producing. And I was most curious, you know, how much he was getting used, what situations, and he's their first line or second line center over there. Last week they had their first kind of heavy schedule where they had three games in a span of 5 days, including a back-to-back, and Joe didn't take any days off, time off. He's playing a regular shift, first power play unit. He said he's the smartest guy on the team in terms of his hockey sense. He did admit, yeah, he's not as fast as he once was. Rayo actually played against Joe way back when Joe first went over to Switzerland during the first lockout. So he's older than his Toronto GM, and he's older than his GM in Davos.
wow.
But he also said that Thornton is given days off with the rest of the team, and he doesn't take them. He's got keys to the rink and the facilities, and he comes in and works out and works on his skating, even when the whole team has a day off. So that just shows the work ethic in this guy and the desires, you know. He talked about the fire in his eyes. And I guess the other thing was the team got off to a bit of a crummy start, and Joe's just joined the team kind of on a temporary basis. But he already stood up in the locker room and kind of riled up the guys. Like he's already being a leader over there, even though it's you know, there's no Stanley Cup on the line. So I think he's gonna make an impact. It's gonna be a fun story to follow, just because he's been in San Jose so long. He's hunting this thing down, and you know, the city that's been hunting this thing down since the 60s. So I just love kind of the romantic ideal of Jumbo taking one last shot at this and it being close to his home.
Yeah. What is this guy going to do without hockey, Luke? Like, this guy, honestly, like, he lives, eats, breathes hockey. It's everything to him. By all accounts, the guy, like you said, he's going to the rink when he's not, like, and on days off, like you said. It's just, I fear for him what he's going to do without the game when that time eventually comes.
Yeah, and his young son's over there in the minor program, and apparently Joe's out there with the kids all the time, helping coach
his son. Oh, my
God,
and
then he's like, he said the son had a tournament, well, whatever, 2-3 hours away on a weekend. Joe drives his son and is right there with the organizers, handing out the medals to all the little Swiss kids. Like, you know, it's his life. Like, I could totally see him, you know, sliding into a assistant coaching role, or, you know, maybe he takes a little bit of time off because he does have a young family. But he's going to be one of those guys that returns to the game, I would imagine.
I can't get over what a legend he is over there. I mean, we already knew the stories. We knew the guys loved him. He doesn't even take an international slot. But, man, hearing everything you're telling me now, I just can only imagine how beloved he is. Now, last one, it's not even really a question. I'm just pitching you an idea here. I feel like you have – I don't know how much pull you have, but you definitely have more pull than either of us. There's going to be an all-Canadian division this year. That means somebody's going to win the Canadian Division Championship. Why don't we use this as the jumping off point to just go full on soccer and effectively award the Canada Cup to the top Canadian team in the regular season every year? I like, it doesn't have to be the ugly flower vase trophy that Mario Lemieux held up all those years ago, but I feel like it's just the perfect chance to kind of start a new tradition in the league. What do you think?
I like that idea.
I mean, the NHL has a lot of trophies already.
but I
don't mind that idea. And I mean, whether it actually comes with some physical hardware or not, I just think there will be a certain amount of bragging rights to be the top team in Canada if it goes this way, and it certainly looks like it does. I can't wait. I think it'll be a really fun wrinkle, and I also think it's going to be good for, you know, for fans and for viewership, and quite honestly, for the company we work for, just because the appetite for hockey is highest north of the border, and you know, to have so many of those matchups with marquee guys in most of those cities, I think it's going to be fantastic hockey.
Yeah, and you just led me into it. They have the President's Trophy. Why don't they just have the Prime Minister's? Like, it's right
the
there.
Prime
you don't
Minister's
even have to,
trophy.
Look at that. I'm a marketing genius. I don't know. Maybe I missed my calling. I think I'm okay at hosting radio shows, but I feel like I could work for the league office. McKee says okay. Luke, thoroughly enjoyed the chat. Keep pumping out those pieces because I'm going to keep reading them. I'll always love having you on.
Okay. Thanks for having me on, guys. This was fun.
There he goes, Luke Fox. And, you know, I didn't say it to him because I'm sure he's tired of hearing it. Best Twitter handle in the game, Luke Fox Jukebox. Follow him on Twitter. Read all his work on sportsnet.ca. McKee, are you with me? The Prime Minister's Trophy.
I absolutely love this idea, Gunner, and I don't know if you said it to him there, but like, this is something that can happen in regular times, you know? Like, it's the top team with the most points in Canada. Like, I just think that adds a great little wrinkle to have the Prime Minister's Trophy. Like, who gets to have it? Like, I think, you know, you always railroad soccer and talk about how many, like, you can't keep track
now.
Of how you can't keep track of all the trophies, but this is kind of like soccer, and, you know, you don't have a tournament for it. But it's just whoever has the most points at the end of the year gets to hold it. So you could imagine a world where, you know, you win as in soccer they would call it, you win the treble. You win not only the President's Trophy, but the Prime Minister's Trophy, and potentially Lord Stanley's Trophy, Lord Stanley's Cup. The three different trophies that you could potentially win. And if you won them all in one year, you could win the treble. So there you go. Can I get you on board with my soccer terms in hockey?
All in. I will say, if you ever refer to it as the top of the table, like I heard Dan Riccio do one time, I might have to drive back into the city of Toronto to fist fight you. But I'm in for calling it the treble. And the only problem is, I think the only way this can work is if hockey players stop being terrified of trophies that aren't Lord Stanley's mug. Like, you can't be handing out a trophy and no one wants any part of it. That's the only thing, because you got to embrace it. You have to. That's the only thing that's standing in the way is hockey. Guys terrified. We know they don't like touching the Prince of Wales or the Clarence. I don't even know what happens with the President's Trophy. That's the only thing. We got to get them on board. And I feel like the new generation, we're going to talk about a little later on, the lack of hate, but this new generation, maybe they're the ones who can start it up.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I'm so all in on this Prime Minister's Trophy idea, Gunner. Like, I'm going to be heartbroken now when that doesn't happen. I think we should create it. You should get that out on Twitter and just start a movement. Maybe get some of the newsmakers to start talking about it. Maybe text our boy CJ. Maybe get Merrick to tweet about it. Maybe get Borny to tweet about it. Get something going here, because that's a million-dollar idea, and I don't know why they don't do it. It's just – it's such a unique thing that there's the smaller amount of Canadian teams, and, you know – Being the President's Trophy winner is great, but not like the Prime Minister's Trophy. Who would have won the Prime Minister's Trophy last year?
I don't know.
Okay. not a very good sell.
No, I know. But see, because there's no trophy attached, if we knew, I would have had that right away. I would have been like, yes, I remember Connor McDavid hoisting ye old Prime Minister's Trophy.
I think it would have been the Oilers, right? That would be the holder of the Prime Minister's Trophy.
You talk about texting CJ, getting Justin Bourne involved. If only there was one of the two of us who was the producer for the Leafs game day broadcast on this very station. If only somebody had that level of pull. I don't know. Oh, wait, that's you. That's what you do. So use that platform, McKee. You could. I have two hobby horses when it comes to Canada and the NHL. One day before I die, I need a quadruple header on Canadian Thanksgiving because I love my family, but I love hockey even more. And give me the Prime Minister's Trophy. I'm combining them. You hand out the Prime Minister's Trophy on the Canadian Thanksgiving quadruple header the next year. Am I selling you?
My head just exploded, and I'm looking at who would have been the top point getter in the NHL, the winner of last year's of the 2019-2020 Prime Minister's Trophy. Is the Edmonton Oilers, unfortunately. So the Leafs were 2 points behind the Oilers for the Prime Minister's Trophy race. So there we go.
Imagine how electric that would have been. It's like, who cares about third in the Atlantic? The Prime Minister's Trophy, though. Ooh, baby. Yeah, give it to me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm all in. You know what? Please. And someone steal this idea from me. I don't have enough juice to get it off the ground. I hope somebody steals it from me. Please, please, please. Somebody else who might get stolen, if you will, a pitcher in the American League East. We're going to talk about that next when we continue on Sportsnet tonight. Yeah, you are. Sportsnet tonight, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Going to dive back into the NBA a little later on. Actually, about 13 minutes from now, talk to James Herbert, NBA writer, CBS Sports. A lot's going on in the NBA. Going to get his thoughts on the Raptors as well, but some more news today. Boogie Cousins signing with the Rockets. What's going on with the Lakers? What's your pecking order in the West? Where do the Raptors fit in the East? Lots to get into with James. We're also going to play the hot new game, Sweeping the Nation, next hour. We're going to talk big deal or no deal. Now, I think this next thing that I'm going to mention is a big deal, and I just feel like I'm going to just throw the oop up and get out of the way. Report today out of Tampa. The Rays are open to trading Blake Snell. Sam McKee, your thoughts.
Rays just laying it up for me again, but man, like, what can you even say? This is just so Rays it hurts. Like, I don't care how well run you are. I don't care how you do this with your sort of, you know, stupid gypsy ways where you develop your develop your pitchers in a lab where they all come out with weird names throwing 100. I don't care about all that. But this is just such classic, despicable Rays. And it's like, you know what? You had your manager take him out of the game in the wrong time, and now it's like, you're going to trade him. It's just, it makes me absolutely sick. So, you know what, Rays? Keep doing you. Keep raising it up. Keep being Rays, because this is just vintage Rays. I hope you get nothing for them, but it's the Rays, and they'll get everything for them, and they'll line their pockets for another 10 years, and then they'll just do the same thing over again, right?
Yes, that is what will happen. Now, let me take the other side ever so slightly. We talked ad nauseum at the start of the show about how whatever the Raptors do is the right thing, because Masai Ujiri's in charge and Bobby Webster's there and the whole team is always going to make the right call. Now, I'm not saying the Rays front office is that, but they've got as good a track record of success in baseball as anybody in the last kind of 5-10 years, if you will. And it feels like, if, again, I can only imagine how sickening it is to be a fan of that team, knowing the second you like somebody and the second they get good, the countdown's on until they're gone. But have they, in your mind, bought any of that? They know what they're doing here, goodwill that you were talking about so much with the Raptors.
Sure, I guess, but like, they've never won anything. So no, I guess maybe not. No, that's a tough question, because like, working within the parameters that they've been given, they've done a phenomenal job, I guess, right? Yep. Like, they have no money, and they're somewhat competitive most years. But just the way they do it makes me sick. And now they're going to, you know, trade away their best pitcher because, you know, it's that time. It's that the moon, you know, the moons have passed, and it's time now for the Rays to do what they always do and trade away their good players and just restock the cupboards and not pay them any money and just do the stupid thing they do. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm a Rays fan, I'm probably caught in the middle here. I'm probably like, great, you know. We're getting rid of my favorite pitcher. My son's favorite pitcher is Blake Snell, and he's no longer going to pitch for the Rays, and that's going to break his heart. But also, we're probably going to get three guys who are really sick and are going to be really good for, what, 4 to 5 years before they trade them again? So it's a weird existence as a Rays fan, and I really wouldn't know how to kind of accept it, because I would be happy because, you know, we're good at doing the bad thing. But, like, we never win anything. It's just a weird existence. I guess there's not that many of them for a reason, but, yeah, I don't know. Good job, Rays. Trade away Blake Snell and just be the Rays. Just be more Raysy.
Well, and it also reeks. Now I'm going to take the complete other side of the argument. It also reeks of like, man, we took a lot of flack for having a good pitcher and pulling him. If all our guys kind of stink and they're no names, who could possibly get mad at us for giving them a tug?
I honestly think that is the number one thing. I really think that they're like, you know what? There probably is like, I mean, not to go too like hot take radio sports radio guy here, but
that's why we're here.
There's probably like some friction, wouldn't you think? Like, sure. Wouldn't you think that, you know, Blake Snell has talked to the front office there and was like, hey, guys, you know, I'm pissed. And, you know, if you can find somebody that's willing to take me or, like, you guys can get a good package for me, I would do it because I'm not really thrilled with the way this thing goes. I kind of see the writing on the wall here. I'm a stud. I want to pitch deeper in the game than I pitch here. I know the way you guys do things, and I hate it, and I hate you. And I hate Kevin Cash, and the fact that I have to go to spring training and look at his big Dumbo face this year who cost us the World Series by taking me out, I think I would probably be a lot of that, right? So I think that they, you know, they're looking very razy doing this, being like, hey, we're getting rid of Blake Snell. But I also think that there's a world in which Blake Snell said, get me the hell out of here. Don't you?
No, I think that makes all the sense in the world to me. I mean, I kind of threw out the theory early on in free agency that, you know, teams talk about market inefficiency all the time, and, you know, that's usually what the player is. But I think a team could kind of turn themselves into the market inefficiency. And I don't think anybody in baseball is going to do this because I think there is so much kind of groupthink and one way to do things. But if a team came out and said, hey, stud free agent, would you like to go 7 if you have it that day? We will allow it. I honestly think it really could separate. I don't think that's going to be the case for everybody. And at the end of the day, money will be the first, second, third, and fourth deciding factor for almost all these guys, and them probably winning. But in terms of kind of being that extra thing that could put you over the edge, I honestly do wonder, you know, why a team hasn't tried that, especially, you know, and who knows, like it won't be the Rays because we know it goes against everything they think, but it'd have to be a team like that has the budget constraints. You know, maybe it's Oakland or somebody like that, but I've wondered why a team hasn't kind of, you know, we love a good zag, and I wonder why I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's true. So, yeah, it's a good point, Gunner, and it just keeps, you know, we're talking this baseball, and I can't help but think, it's like, could somebody just sign someone? Like, is that too much to ask, Gunner? Like, I would love to come on here and talk about, I would give you a couple segments on the Jay signing Jay Happ right now, like, literally anything, and it's just, everybody is, guess what? This is the league the Rays built. Salary suppression. Don't pay too much. You know, you can get guys for value. What happened to the years when I was a kid when literally the day free agency opened, there was $100 million bangers being handed out left and right. And every team was an arms race and spending all this money. And now the Rays have shown that you don't have to spend money and you can be competitive. And all these nerd boys running all these front offices, and they're just like, no, just wait until the spring. You'll get better value. Oh, I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate the Rays. I hate what they're doing to Blake Snell. I hate Kevin Cash. I hate the front office. I hate their jerseys. I hate their hats. I hate it. I hate the park they play in. This is just classic Rays, and I'm sick of talking about it, to be fair.
Here. Enough of me. I will jump in. You know I love a little sports fashion. That was a terrible hat they wore in the World Series, and it's at least 1% of the reason they lost. It's a great hat for Tuesday night in the middle of May, but don't give it to me at the
Tuesday
Fall Classic.
Against the Royals. Just fine.
Yes. Lovely. What else is just fine? Just to put a bow on that. So Snell, he's got 3 years left. It's 10.5 this year, 12.5 in 2021, and then $16 million to finish things out. Or in 2022, $60 million to close it out in 2023. Somebody is going to get a stud at a very controllable cost. We'll have to see what happens. Obviously, that'll certainly change the landscape, especially if he happens to land in this division. We know the Yankees are never shy. Red Sox have been making a little bit of noise there as well. We'll see what happens. And hey, the Blue Jays, we've been told they might be adding some pitching, so wouldn't that
prove
be
it.
Nice to see? Yeah, prove it. Certainly, we've talked ad nauseum about what could maybe happen. I'd love nothing more than to be talking to you on Monday morning or Monday night about, well, you know, we do the pre-show meeting, but Monday night right here about the big Jays move that happened, or quite frankly, even just somebody big signing somewhere across baseball. I'd love
literally
to see
anywhere. I'd take anything.
honestly, and, you know, a bit of a tangent here, but, you know, the NHL is a league that has shied away from off-ice news for so long. Think about how much pub, how much name, or how much talk they got just for releasing new jerseys all across the league. There is a bit of a gap in the sports calendar, and guess what, baseball? Once the NBA is back, I don't think the big free agent contract is going to be quite as sexy. This is your window. Get it done now so people can talk about it. I think you completely agree with everything I'm laying down there, McKee.
You couldn't have, you know, you could not be preaching more to the choir, Gunnar. You are preaching to my choir. I am just singing to you as you preach to me. So there we go.
All right. Dogs will be barking in the west end of the city of Toronto. If you're
glasses
there.
Will be shattering.
That's right. It'll be like the early pandemic in Italy. You out on the balcony just singing my praises for my
those are the most
idea.
Beautiful videos ever.
Oh, they were. Remember when we thought the pandemic was going to bring everyone together? Oh,
yeah,
kind
no.
Kind of the opposite. Kind of the opposite. No. What does bring people together? It's the NBA, including the Pope. Now, we're not going to really talk about that with James Herbert, but we are going to talk about a Boogie Cousins landing in Houston, what's going on with the Raptors, and how things are looking out west and east. We'll get into that with James Herbert. A couple hours left when we continue on Sportsnet tonight. Reaching the halfway mark here of Sportsnet tonight. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Started the show off with a lot of Raptors thoughts because, boy, most of them were good this weekend. Some sad, obviously. A little disappointed to see Serge Ibaka go. Very disappointed to see where he ended up. Going to bounce around the NBA at large now. Joining us now to do just that, James Herbert of CBS. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to get your thoughts on the Raptors, have to, local team, but I do want to kind of look bigger picture with you. I don't know that anyone's helped themselves as much as the Lakers have this year. Is there kind of a bigger winner in free agency so far for you?
Not to me. To me, the Lakers, it's funny because after they had Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder, a lot of people were more excited about their offseason than I was. I understand it. Like, as just a pure talent play, both of them made a lot of sense. I mean, these are the two guys. I mean, one of them won Sixth Man of the Year. The other one was right there and could have won that same award. And it lets them do a little bit of, they can diversify their offense a little bit with those guys. Those guys can hold down the second unit potentially in the same way that Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell did for the Clippers. But I looked at that and I thought, you know, as good as they are on offense, both of those guys can be kind of attacked and exploited on the other end. I don't know if you want them both in the game kind of at the end once you're in the playoffs, especially in second round and beyond, especially if you're going up against elite offensive teams. But after they added Marcus Gasol to the mix, I mean, that just kind of changes everything for me. They can run stuff through him in the high post. His ability to stretch out and shoot the three kind of makes everybody else better. Like, that makes the LeBron Anthony Davis pick and roll better. I think he can play with Harrell, and that will allow them to stay big and stay relatively good defensively. I mean, Marc Gasol is still an absolutely elite defender in the NBA. And then when he's on the other end, I mean, his passing opens things up, his shooting opens things up. And I think his IQ, I mean, it's still like near the top of the league. And that's something that I think is kind of like a force multiplier. Like, one of the things we saw with the Raptors, especially in their title run, is when you have a whole bunch of guys on the court who are elite defenders, and when you have a whole bunch of guys on the court who are extremely smart players and process information quickly, then it just kind of is like this exponential sort of effect. And I think having Gasol and LeBron on the same team will just, like, they will have chemistry so quickly. I think when you're talking about contenders, they have kind of separated themselves from everybody else. Though I will say, like, some of the stuff that Gasol does for the Lakers in terms of making them more versatile, Serge Ibaka can have that same effect on the Clippers. I mean, they could not play a five-out lineup that didn't have some kind of gaping hole defensively last season, and now they can do that with Serge Ibaka every night.
Yeah, so I, that's what the question I was going to ask you here, and we were talking about it in the first hour, and I just would love to get your take on it, James. How do you feel about the fit of Serge Ibaka in L.A. in terms of taking him out of sort of the Raptor system that was sort of, I would say, comfy for him, and they really kind of played to him with the, you know, the Lowry pick and pop and kind of worked the offense through him on certain nights. How do you think it's going to translate over to the Clippers without sort of the security blanket of the Raptor system? Do you think it's going to be a good fit?
I think it will be a good fit. I think, you know, it, depending on what else the Clippers do, like if they can get another ball handler that might help. I don't know if Lou Williams is a guy that they want to trade or not. He's certainly been kind of rumored to potentially maybe be available, but like Williams can work with him well offensively, but like he is on a team that like there's not that Kyle Lowry who would just spoon feed Serge Ibaka open mid-range shots all the time. I think some people, I would count myself as one of them, I like kind of have preferred him to pop further out and go to the three-point line, but he loved those mid-rangers. He shot them extremely well the last couple of years. He was a very efficient offensive player, especially for a guy that took that many mid-range shots. And the Clippers have some other players on the team who occupy that space and do it well, but that wasn't really particularly a problem when Serge Ibaka and Kawhi Leonard were teammates before. I think the reason why he fits so well is that he gives them kind of like that look that they had when they would move Jamichael Green to the five, or in some instances have Marcus Morris play the five last year. But this is still a 7-footer who can change shots at the rim, who can come up with big offensive rebounds. He's not, you know, at this stage of his career anyway, the guy who's going to be a vertical spacer, excuse me, in a really significant way. He's not a guy who's going to catch a ton of alley-oops or anything like that. You can get the occasional one. And defensively, while he's not Bam Adebayo that's going to be like enthusiastically switching on to point guards and containing them 25 feet from the basket, I think he's more versatile defensively than their other bigs have been for the past few years in terms of the fact that he can guard on the perimeter a bit. He can stay in front of people. And then he absolutely can like battle big guys, like genuine big guys on the inside and chain shots around the rim, block shots as a help defender. We saw him play a little bit with Marc Gasol in Toronto, much less so than he would have when he was younger and he was playing power forward next to Kendrick Perkins all the time. Like, he is to me mostly a center, but I mean, at least theoretically, they could even play him in lineups with Zubat. So I think mostly it'll be a platoon system there for the Clippers.
Yeah, I think he could, especially here in Toronto, it felt like he got really unlocked when he went, you know, more or less exclusively to the five. So, you know, I agree with you that yeah. Probably tends to be how he'll be used there. You know, we've been talking a lot about the guy who left the Raptors. Let's talk about the one who stayed with them. Fred VanVleet, obviously, he gets his big payday. It's especially in this market here, there's not a soul who doesn't think it's well-deserved. But, you know, across the league, I guess not how is he viewed right now? Because he was the, you know, one of the top free agents available. But the kind of question that I feel like some people are asking outside of the market, not so much in it, is just exactly what can a team's kind of ceiling be? You know, let's look 2-3 years down the line where it is not the combo of VanVleet and Lowry, but maybe it's just VanVleet. You know, what does he, you know, if he is kind of your lead guard, him alone, what does that give your team as a ceiling?
Yeah, I think that's why VanVleet is interesting, and that is why I think if he had signed not in Toronto, like if he had gone to, say, the Knicks or to, you know, if he had gone to the Hornets, I mean, that probably wasn't going to happen after they got LaMelo Ball, but like if he had gone to a team that was kind of in an earlier stage of the process and they said, all right, like we want you to be the guy making most of the plays on this team, then I think people might look at that and just there would be some skepticism. I think this version of VanVleet, if you were to just say you are the point guard, you are going to have, you know, a high 20s usage rate on this team, I think there would be some problems. I think he has room to improve as a finisher. I think he has room to improve as a creator. I think he is somebody who can get his own shot. He has his whole life played point guard. He has run teams. I think the offense flows pretty smoothly in Toronto when Lowry is on the court, but there are kind of these like discrete areas of the game where I think he just needs to be like a little bit more efficient. And then he could kind of vault himself into yet another echelon, but he is a guy that has improved every year. And I think this is kind of the perfect role for him right now. He could do more than he has the past few years, but I don't think he necessarily needs to be a guy where the primary task he's responsible for is playmaking, because by the way, he's one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. He is a guy who is comfortable guarding bigger players. He is extremely smart. He will set good picks as a little guy. He will box people out as a little guy. He is expending so much energy in so many different ways that I don't know that you want to tell him, like, we just want you to focus on going out there and scoring and averaging 13 assists a game, trying to, like, you know, be that kind of dude. But, like, I will say, like, a few years from now, like, if he keeps going on the trajectory that he is, I think he naturally will kind of evolve into a guy that can handle more of that responsibility. I think he has shown in the past few years that as a starting caliber NBA player, he is capable of playing like an important role on a championship team. I mean, he was coming off the bench for the Raptors title run, but that was sort of a name only by the end of the playoffs. Like by the end of the playoffs, he was starting every second half. He was the one in the box and one guarding Stephen Curry. Like, this guy is not a sort of A1 star level player, but I think he's also beyond even like a high level role player. Like, he is a very good starter in the NBA. And if he can kind of make little improvements over the next few years, I think that will add up to being a guy where this contract that they gave him will look like it looks fair and good right now, but it could end up looking like extremely good by the end of this contract.
So you look around the league, James, and, you know, there was a lot of money handed out to a lot of different guys, but which one of them was the most eye-popping to you? Was it Gordon Hayward, or was it somewhere else that really blew you away?
Gordon Hayward was, like, just in terms of, like, pure value, like, I did not expect anything like that for him. But I think when you combine sort of the team that they gave it to him, the whole situation, the decision by the player, the Jeremy Grant contract was the one that stunned me. Because from everything I was kind of hearing, it was like the Nuggets absolutely were prioritizing him. They loved him. He played the best basketball of his career there. We saw how important he was to that team during its run to the Western Conference Finals. He was able to play an important role for them on both ends, right? Like, everybody was talking about his defense, but he was out there making threes. He was even creating a little bit off the dribble by the end of the playoffs, and he's a guy that they believed in. He had such a good time there. I just assumed if there was a scenario in which he left the Nuggets, like, yeah, it might look something like what we saw. Some team goes completely overboard and pays him like a star, which is what the Pistons did. Like, they went and gave him $60 million over 3 years. He is a guy who historically has never been much of a creator. He has always been a role player, and only relatively recently has he been any kind of shooter at the NBA level. And they went and paid him more than what they were willing to pay their own guy, Christian Wood, who is a little bit of a similar player, but I think probably has more upside. But the fact that they made that offer, and the Nuggets said, okay, like, we will also give you that money, Jeremy. We will give you $20 million a year. You can stay on this team where you have chemistry with everybody, where you kind of broke out in a different way, where we just went to the Western Conference Finals. We're going to keep building this thing with you. And he said, no thanks, I'm going to Detroit, where all the other moves that they made in free agency, everybody was kind of looking around and asking what the heck they were doing. That entire thing shocked me, and I saw very little of that happening. For all of that to happen, like, I'm still kind of in shock that that's actually what went down with Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, I am. I'm right there with you. I certainly raised my eyebrows a little bit at that one. Took my glasses off, rubbed them, cleaned my glasses, put them back on. Nope, that's actually, in fact, what I saw. So yeah, I was pretty surprised there. Yeah. One guy who is obviously a little more established that I'm curious about this year is Steph Curry. You know, obviously we know the Klay Thompson injury. It's such a kind of blow to that team and the NBA at large, as far as I'm concerned. But how much do you think this year kind of quote unquote matters for Steph Curry. I mean, there is a floor on how he'll be viewed. He is one of the great players of this era. He'll be a Hall of Famer. He's probably going to go down as the greatest shooter of all time. But do you feel like he can kind of raise how he's viewed across the league in people's books if he is able to kind of, because it feels like the whole time we've seen this Steph Curry machine, it's been in that perfect Warriors ecosystem with everything kind of quite right around him. And it feels like this is maybe, in my opinion, the first year where it's pretty much just on him. How much do you think he can kind of change his perception across the league? Or maybe I'm an idiot and it's already locked in stone.
Well, I think to a certain extent, like, people have sort of forgotten about him and forgotten just how high a level he was playing at. But before his injury, before the Warriors had this lost season. And in that respect, yeah, I mean, if he comes out and he's playing an MVP level, which he had essentially been doing on every team that he had played on since the Warriors turned themselves into championship contenders, then yeah, I think that would be kind of like, just from an individual perspective, like, that would be big. But I think if we're, you know, if we're talking about the grander scheme of things and where he stands all time, like, I don't know that he really has much to prove at this point. I mean, his MVP awards, his championships, like, he has some of the most efficient high scoring seasons we've ever seen, some of the best shooting seasons we have ever seen. Maybe there is something to prove for him in terms of just individual playmaking and breaking guys down and making tougher shots. You saw in the little that he played last year, he had a little bit of a tougher time. The Warriors' spacing wasn't quite as good. Their movement wasn't quite as good. There was just more attention geared directly toward him, and his teammates couldn't make defenses pay in the same way. Like, you saw him taking some tougher shots. You saw him a little bit more efficient. This is before he hurt his hand, right? And I think maybe there's some room for improvement there. I'm interested as anybody to see how he looks, but I mean, we're obviously talking about a first ballot Hall of Famer here. We're talking about one of the greatest players to ever play, and we're talking about one of the guys who, and if you look back at the way the game has evolved, he changed the course of NBA history and started taking shots that nobody in the history of the game was ever taking regularly and making regularly. So it's a little bit of a weird one, because I think he will have an opportunity to kind of enter himself into a conversation in a different way and remind people how great he is. But if we really zoom out, I'm kind of like we know who Steph Curry is and like what he's meant to the game and the league.
Yeah, well, well said. We will kick that around ourselves. James, thoroughly enjoyed the chat tonight. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
There we go. It's James Herbert, CBS. So where are you at on that, McKee? Because I'll be honest, when it comes to Steph, I am a little bit of I'm not a hater, not a doubter, but I do kind of, and again, this all boils down to my, you know, affinity and love for LeBron James, and a guy who has had to make it work in less than perfect situations at times in his NBA career. And I've always kind of rolled my eyes at how, and again, I want to be clear, Steph Curry, first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest players of his era, greatest shooter of all time. All those things are true, but I do kind of roll my eyes at the, you know, the first unanimous MVP, and it's like, yeah, well, everything's been perfect for him the entire time of his prime. So, you know, where are you at on that? Would it kind of change your perception in any way, shape, or form, or is it kind of locked in for you?
I think what James said there was pretty bang on. I think the perception, you know, the bed's kind of been made on Steph Curry's legacy. I think most people kind of think that, you know, he's one of the, like all the stuff you laid out there. I think a lot of people think about that with him. But, you know, he's had some pretty good teams around him. You know, he happened to get Kevin Durant to come there and play with them. They, you know, they've had some pretty good teams there. So I definitely think that if, you know, the Warriors go out this year and without Klay Thompson, which is just such a brutal blow, and they're maybe like a 40-win team, I think maybe the perception on him would change a little bit. But here's the thing, Gunner. The reason they're going to be a 40-win team is because he's going to be averaging 35 points or 33 points or whatever and just taking ridiculous shots and playing that super, super aesthetically pleasing style of basketball that he plays and really gets this generation of fans fired up. So I really don't think there's anything that will ever change with Steph Curry's legacy after this year, but I think it's an interesting discussion, and I'm really excited to see what they have. I, you know, anytime I've ever watched the Warriors play the Raptors, and specifically in the finals and, you know, leading into those in those years when the Raptors were playing well, the guy that always scared me the most was by far Klay Thompson. I always thought Klay Thompson was their best shooter, was their best, scariest guy when, as an opposing fan. But of course, Steph Curry was unbelievable as well. And that's what made them the Splash Brothers. That's what made them sort of the one of the premier teams of this generation. But yeah, Steph should be interesting to see what he has. I don't know what they will be this year. Obviously, no Klay, but we'll see. And it's going to be great. Gunner, it's like a month away. It's less than a month away. And there's NBA games will be happening. So it's pretty amazing.
Oh, I can't believe we're finally here. I mean, I know LeBron's not happy about it, having to get back to work so early. He definitely would have liked January a little more. But yeah, I guess I should probably just, before we step aside, I should probably clarify my opinion on this. I think Curry's kind of in a house money situation. I don't think the floor for his legacy can be lowered at all by anything that happens this year or the rest of the way. But I do think for people, and I'm putting myself in this, it would raise him a little bit for me. And I, you know, this isn't some, it would make him 12 instead of 13 or whatever. I'm not sitting there kind of ranking him like that, but it would just change how I feel about him a little to kind of see him not only be a beast, because I think we all agree whether they win, whether this is a, you know, a tire fire year and they win 20 games or whether they win 60, he's going to be averaging close to 30 points a game. So yeah, it's not so much about what he produces, it's what he's able to do. You know, we, you know, just think about it in a kind of juxtaposition with the guy we've talked about so much tonight, Fred VanVleet. You know, he gets all these accolades because he's been part of winning and he's been able to do more with less and all that. And I think if you're able to kind of show Curry as that, you know, maybe, you know, that more kind of floor general team leader type, I think he hasn't got credit for being that guy in the past because it's always looked easy. We think of Steve Kerr as the leader of that team. We think of Draymond Green as the vocal leader of that team. I think if this is a year where Curry really kind of throws the group on his back, it can change how he's perceived, at least just a little bit for me.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point, Gunner. And yeah, I definitely think that that could happen. And look, I'm just excited to see Steph play again. Like, I agree with you that I wasn't the biggest fan of the Warriors, and you know, the whole Kevin Durant, I mean, my thoughts on that are extremely well documented, but the whole Kevin Durant situation with them kind of recruiting him there after losing to LeBron, that made me sick. And I know that Steph Curry obviously had to be a big part of it. But look, I mean, there's been not many guys in the history of the league that have been as fun to watch as Steph Curry has. And like James said there, you know, he's sort of influenced the whole style of basketball that's really, yeah, you know, taken over. And I mean, you could argue that maybe that's not the best thing for the NBA. Maybe people will say that it's not as good as it used to be or whatever. But I like points. I like three-point shots. So I like the way the NBA is now these days. But yeah, Steph's been instrumental in sort of changing it into this, yeah, just jack-up three-ball generation. And there's going to be a whole generation of players coming into the NBA that have learned from him, and it's going to be a wild league, and we'll see where it goes. But yeah, it's a big year for Steph, Gunner. I think it's a good point. I completely agree. It's a big year for him coming up.
Yeah, and the perception thing's interesting, because I'd love to spin it back in a world, because I remember watching him at Davidson. I was living in my college house with my roommates there. Like, we were all locked in watching that, and there was nobody I loved watching more. And then he just found himself in the perfect situation, and it definitely made me, you know, kind of feel a certain way about him. And it's funny how I think of Damian Lillard. It's like, who's the better player? Well, there's no doubt about it. It's Steph Curry. But I love Dame. I love everything he stands for, whereas Curry, take it or leave it. So, yeah, it is funny how perception certainly changes things. What else is fun? Playing the hottest game, sweeping the nation.
Oh yeah,
big deal or no deal, we'll tell you about it, and we'll play it next on Sportsnet tonight. I gotta hand it to my co-host here, Brent Gunning. That's me, my co-host Sam McKee. Put on his chef's hat. You know, we talk about Chef Curry last segment. He put on his chef's hat and he cooked up a wonderful little game that lets us talk about things that are hard to devote a whole block to. But boy, do we have some thoughts. It's sweeping the nation, or at the very least, the west end of Toronto and into Burlington. Big deal or no deal. McKee, your game. I'll give you the honors. Would you like to kick it off? Would you like me to start us off? It's up to you.
I let you start.
Okay.
Do we have any deal or no deal music anywhere?
There we go.
Maybe a little less music.
It feels like a bigger deal now, let me tell you.
Oh yeah.
Big Perfect. First one.
Great
big deal
job,
or no yeah. deal. The big deal or no deal music. Huge, massive deal.
Big
makes
deal.
The segment
big deal.
Sing. Okay, yeah. I'm going to start in the NHL because, hey, why wouldn't I? You're looking at me. No, I'm not going to steal the one I know you want to throw at me. The Jets hire Adam Lowry's dad, who plays on the team, as an assistant coach. Is this a big deal or is this no deal?
I think this is no deal. I think no deal because there's a ton of this in the NHL. There's a ton of nepotism. There's a ton of old boys club. There's a ton of that stuff in the NHL. I'm shocked this doesn't happen more often. Has there been players that have played for coaches that are their parents? I feel like that's
sure
have
a
happened.
Sutter has coached a Sutter at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure this has happened at some point. So I think for the fact that the NHL is just an old boys club full of nepotism, I say no, this is not a big deal. Gunnar, what do you think?
I think it's a bit of a big deal. It's just kind of weird. It's the one, like, it just adds another kind of, I don't even want to say combustible, because of course they wouldn't have hired him if it wasn't going to work and it hadn't been talked about with lots of people on the team. But it just kind of adds one more wrinkle. Let's say things aren't going so well. Let's say Adam's having a bit of a down year and he's not getting that stern talking to in the video room. I don't know. It feels to me like, what's the upside? And again, no knock on Adam Lowry's dad, by all accounts, very deserving of the job. It just feels like again, he's an assistant coach. You couldn't find somebody else to, and I know this isn't what they do, but open the bench. Like, come on, it does feel like it had to be him. I don't know. That's why I kind of go big deal on it.
Yeah, but I also feel like, Adam Lowry isn't necessarily the most exciting player. It's not like it's like
Fair.
It's not like it's Patrick Laine's dad or like Mark Scheifele's dad. I feel like, I think Adam Lowry can be – I think Dave Lowry can be hard on Adam Lowry, and I think Adam Lowry's not going to be like, oh, Dad, you embarrass me. Like, I think he kind of knows the rules. So, yeah, I'm sticking no deal. I can kind of understand why it might be a big deal and there might be a little bit of, resentment maybe is the right word towards him, but I don't think Adam Lowry's good enough to maybe make a ripple. So,
okay.
No deal.
I like that. Quick last thought on that. Mark Scheifele's dad, I don't know anything about him, but if he loves hockey half as much of his son, he should be a coach in the NHL. Because I don't know, you talk about people, a guy who used to work on this station here, we love him, Andrew Walker, he loves hockey. Mark Scheifele loves hockey. By all accounts, that guy just cannot seem to get enough. So, I don't know. Maybe if you're hiring a dad, maybe it should be Scheifele's. Who knows? What have you got for me?
All right, well, we got to start here. And we were talking about it earlier with Luke Fox, and Luke Fox is poo-pooing it, but this isn't the time for poo-pooing.
No.
Big deal or no deal? Connor McDavid traveled to Arizona to skate with the Toronto Maple Leafs, Austin Matthews. Gunner, is this a big deal or is this no deal?
I got to get out my thesaurus here. Gargantuan, huge, humongous. I guess that's just a bigger form of huge. Whatever the biggest type of deal it could possibly be is, it's a big deal. And not only are they training together, it's not, I'm sure, again, Luke's going to tell me we're reading way too much into this. It's not like Austin Matthews went to travel and see Connor McDavid up in Edmonton. Oh, no, it was the other way around with McDavid going to see Matthews. Also, the other part of this, by all accounts, they will not play on opposite teams. They love skating together. That's the part where it's like, there is definitely some smoke here. I saw some other things about, do you talk about each other's organizations?
Yeah.
Some things are private. Oh, like ripping up the Oilers? At least that's what I'm going to sell myself on it. This is a massive deal, and you can't tell me otherwise.
So, yeah, I was going to read those quotes to you because they're just so beautiful, but it's from the piece, If there are any complaints about these skates, it's that Matthews and McDavid are often on the same team for the scrimmages. That's pretty funny, but they want it that way. A chance to play together for a change. McDavid's temporary move to Arizona also gives both men the opportunity to spend some downtime together. Although they prefer to keep that out of the spotlight. Asked if they discussed their NHL organizations and what Edmonton and Toronto are like, both said, some things are private, like you said, Gunnar. Matthews and McDavid had that in common. They do their talking over the ice. Over the past 2 weeks, they've been doing plenty of it. whenever we start the 2021 season, they'll be ready for it. Oh boy. And whenever they start the 2026 hockey season with Matthews and McDavid as the 1-2 punch for the Toronto Maple Leafs, they'll be ready. Because I have some thoughts on this. And my initial thoughts when I saw this were, I kind of hate that they're skating together because, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm not that old school of a guy, but I definitely have old school tendencies. I kind of hate that the stars of the two teams in Canada that are kind of supposed to be rivals are playing together and are kind of like loving each other. I think that's a little weird. I don't know. It's not what would have happened in the years gone past. And people brought up the arguments like, oh, well, Sid and McKinnon and Marchand skate together. Yeah, well, they're all from 5 minutes apart in Nova Scotia, and that's where they live. And it's like they're three NHL players. So, yeah, that makes sense. I just think, you know, I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. And I know that's a stupid old man take. But I got to say, Gunner, if I'm an Oilers fan, I am capital T triggered about this. Like, I don't think it's nearly as bad from a Toronto perspective. Like, I'm not worried about, you know, Matthews leaving for Edmonton. The thought that keeps me up at night is him going to Arizona, not him going to Edmonton. Like, Matthews is not going to Edmonton. But, I mean, what's the conversation always surrounding McDavid? And every Leaf fan loves to talk about it. And there's a part of me, you know, there is a part of me that thinks that McDavid is sending a message to the Oilers. I really do think that. You know, like, you don't think that there's a little bit of premeditated to this? That he's being like, hey, man, you guys, like, we better start winning here. Because my boy over here, Matthews, we love playing together. He plays in my hometown. We're friends now. So maybe start winning on the ice here, Edmonton. And I know Connor's a big part of that. But maybe put some pieces around me. And maybe get a tendy that isn't Mike Smith. Maybe that's a thought.
That's a first, second, and third job in Edmonton. Side note, I want to get back to this very delicious Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid story. Quick side note, get a goalie. Quit just Flames and Oilers trading bad goalies back and forth across the province. Like,
one of those guys, honestly.
Like, okay, we called Rent a goalie. They don't have anyone, so I'll just get the guy who used to play for Calgary. Like, okay, side note. Also, the other reason why this should terrify Oilers fans is, hey, the salary cap, a very real thing. Like, of course, you have to find a way, and they're probably sitting there, oh, you can't just plop an $11 million player into the lineup, but what if I were to tell you the Leafs have a contract that's worth exactly $11 million that ends the year before Connor McDavid ends? I could see John Tavares taking the 1-year deal and then figuring things out. Like, that's the actual thing that really should terrify Oilers fans, is that the Leafs basically have a placeholder contract in place. And it's not a placeholder. He's their captain, and he's a tremendous center. Don't make me walk down that road.
Yeah, he's a top 10 player in the league.
Looking at you, Dan Riccio. Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that that contract slot is going to be sitting there effectively waiting, and, you know, who knows what John Tavares looks like when that's, what, year, I believe, 35 for him. He'll be 35 years old at the end of that deal. You can just see a world where it makes all too much sense. I mean, it's, you know, we had Luke on, and he was joking earlier with us saying, oh, you know, Dylan Larkin skates with Connor McDavid. No one says anything. There's two things at play. No one wants to play for the Wings, and who cares about Dylan Larkin?
Yeah, like, and it's not the Leafs. And everything, hey, I don't know if you heard this or not, but the hockey world revolves around Toronto and the Leafs, and how does this affect the Leafs? And Dylan Larkin skating with McDavid doesn't, like, you can't, like, Luke, I love you, Luke, and, like, you're a great guy, and we talk about it, but you can't poo-poo this. This isn't nothing. This is not nothing, Gunner. I'm sorry. Anyways.
And then I do want to pick
it going,
up, though.
We're just going to talk about this forever.
One more thing. I didn't really pick up the thing you laid down of the idea of these guys training together and whether I like it or not. That is not an old man take. That's the right take. There is too much buddy-buddy, and it's why the regular season can be so boring at times in this league. Now, again, in this particular instance, please buddy it up. Be best friends. Go to dinner from a social distance and all that stuff. I guess it's Arizona. Who cares? But, like,
yeah, they can
that
do whatever they
one
want
I'm
down
kind
there.
Of... Yeah, it's a Wild West going on. Who knows? But the idea that these two players, who again should by all accounts be using one another, I guess you can make the case Connor McDavid has no measuring sticks in the league. Okay, sure. But Auston Matthews definitely should be looking at McDavid as that measuring stick player. I don't love the fact they're getting together, again, because of the repercussions that I'm sure will happen 6 years down the road. Yes, please do it. But I mean, I wouldn't love it if William Nylander and Jack Eichel were yucking it up down in Buffalo at the KeyBank or whatever the 75 arena changes that place has been through. I wouldn't like that at all. You know, if you're a Flames fan, let's just keep it in Alberta. Matthew Tkachuk cruising around, laughing it up with Connor. No, you don't want that. You want them to kind of hate each other. You want the discomfort. You want there to be that kind of, you know, friction between star players in this league. And, you know, I guess the toothpaste is out of the tube. There's no way of ever putting it back, but I'm with you, man. Like there's definitely a kind of lack of friction, a lack of, and you know, sports hate, whatever you want to call it. I'd like to see it. And hey, maybe the answer is, and this is a fairly fair point. These guys haven't been in the league long enough. They have not been through the playoff wars of a decade that it took. I mean, I seem to remember Sid Novi hating each other from the jump. Maybe that's the kind of Canada-Russia part of it all.
Yeah,
but it does feel like, yeah, that's probably it. Okay, we should move on because I could do another 3 hours on this. And it's really just saying Connor McDavid's going to be a Leaf come 2026. Okay, yeah. Well, you want to talk about meeting with powerful figures. There was a powerful meeting in Arizona. I don't even know where to go this. I just feel like we kind of got to talk about it. Big deal or no deal? A bunch of the NBA players met with the Pope today at the Vatican. Feels like a big deal to me, to be perfectly honest.
So this is one of my big deals or no deals. And I had the exact same thought, being like, I don't really know what the discussion is. But it's a big deal, man. It's the Pope. And the guys that they picked are so random. I got to find the tweet. Do you have the tweet up, the names?
It's like Anthony Tolliver, Jonathan Isaac, Kyle Korver's in the mix there. Michelle Robinson, obviously the PA director.
Gallinari's in the mix, right?
You know Danilo. Danilo had to have a little pull saying, get me in. Come on, get me in. I'm right there with you. I don't know what to say about it, but it feels like we kind of have to talk about it. It's just like, that's a massive figure. I also will say, I get it. You got to give them the gift of whatever. You can't give them a Magic jersey. You can't do it. It's just, like, come on. How many other players are there in the league? They presented him with a Magic jersey with, I think, Pope and number one on the back.
Magic.
I don't know. It feels like you could do a better team.
Yikes. So here's the thing. Like, by all accounts, I'm not a big Pope guy. Like, I don't keep tabs on the Pope. But some stuff I've been seeing in the news about this Pope seems like a pretty good Pope. Seems like a pretty down-to-earth, cool Pope. Kind of a fan of this Pope. So if there's ever going to be a guy that they meet with, this guy seems like the guy. And what does Anthony Tolliver say to the Pope? What does Danilo Gallinari say to the Pope? It's just such a random thing that I saw and my eyes kind of crossed, but I love that you brought it up. And it's a huge deal, Gunner. It's a big, big deal.
Yeah, massive deal. Again, I don't really know what to say about it either, but yeah, it's just one of those things. I'll throw one more at you here, switching gears to the NFL. A bunch of the Ravens have COVID. So does Adam Thielen. Baltimore is supposed to play your beloved Steelers in, I don't know, about 72 hours from now. Big deal or no deal that the Ravens have COVID, or at least a large chunk of the team?
I just got disconnected there, Gunner, and I was panicking. But you said that the whole NFL having COVID is a big deal or no deal?
Yeah.
You know what I think? I don't think it's a big deal at all because, you know, they just keep powering through. And, like, I've said it on this radio station a lot of times. I'm no, you know, corona police officer. Like, I keep powering through, NFL. We need the content, baby. Like, no one's, like, these guys, by all accounts, are all recovering fine. Maybe Andy Dalton said that he was pretty sick for a little while. Power through, baby. I want to see the Ravens, and I want to see the Steelers on Thursday night. So just keep your head down. How have they not missed a week? Like, how? It's just insane. They're such a craven league. Remember how I said that, like, the reports, like, 5 years from now, Seth Wickersham was going to come out and be like,
yeah,
the NFL covered up thousands of... They're not even covering it up. Like, Adam Thielen was catching touchdown passes last night. Yesterday. And he's like, yeah, he's got COVID. Probably had COVID the whole time. Oh, you're playing next Thursday. Like, it's insane. Like, it's so rotten. It's so bad. But guess what? I love watching it, so I'm never going to complain. So it's a not a big deal. It's not a big deal.
It's not. And the one thing I would add on that as well is like, maybe, and again, maybe this is an unfair, you want to talk about an old man take. This one's certainly caveman-y. You decide to play football for a living. Like, I feel like you're already kind of taking your health in your hands there. Like, it feels like here's the thing. I'm not, I would never wish COVID on anyone. I hope the league can do as good a job protecting everybody as possible. You are playing football for a living. I feel like you're just a little more susceptible to the danger. That's all I'll say.
Okay, that's good. All right. I got one for you here. That's not it's not sports related at all.
Ooh.
So I saw this in the New York Post today. And I don't know if you're familiar, but down in the States, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is always renowned as one of the big, I think it's like Wasted Wednesday or like Wipeout Wednesday. I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with alliteration here. But it's the one Wednesday before everything on the Thursday, Friday, where everyone comes back from school or whatever, and you meet up with your old flame, you have a few bowls of loudmouth soup, and you enjoy it. So big deal or no deal? The Pennsylvania governor halts alcohol sales before Thanksgiving. Big deal or no deal?
That's a massive deal. I mean, look, people love, as you would put it, loudmouth soup everywhere. I feel like that's a loudmouth soup state, if you will. I feel like they like to get after it a little bit. We know Philly's reputation, Pittsburgh maybe not far behind at a time. So, yeah, I think that's a huge deal. I'm not going to sit here and play epidemiologist. Very proud of myself for nailing that pronunciation. I'm not going to tell you good idea, bad idea, but it is a big, big deal.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think, you know, in this world we live in, that's actually probably an extremely admirable, smart move, truly. Because, you know, look, the States and here too. People just said, Rona be damned, I'm having a good summer, I'm having a good fall, I don't care about this, Rona be damned. And you know what? He went down there and he's like, guess what? You can't say Rona be damned because I'm going to take away your booze. But you know what he's probably not going to do? Win the next election or whatever. He just sewered his legacy for the greatness. He's probably never going to win again, but it's probably the right call to get rid of booze because that really hampers your sort of Wipeout Wednesday celebrations. And I don't know if it's called Wipeout Wednesday, but that's what I've come up with.
Can I give you the voiceover for the ads his opponents will be running in the next?
Give me ads.
Can you give me a placeholder name for the governor of Pennsylvania? Because Lord knows neither of us knows who it is. Jim Smith, does that work?
I was going to say Jimbo Jones. How's that sound?
Okay, Jimbo Jones. My opponent, Jimbo Jones, hates fun, Christmas, puppies, and babies. Also, bowls of loudmouth soup. Here in my Pennsylvania, you will have fun, you will get after it, and the Steelers will win. There we go. I'm pretty sure I'm a member of Congress in Pennsylvania after all that right now. I think that's how it works. I don't know. But that's probably exactly what it is. I love when we get a little bit outside of the lane of sports. Thank you so much for giving that to me.
I had one more, but it's just too depressing, so I don't want to talk about it. It's just about the NHL. And you see Kipper's tweet today about talking about it?
Yeah.
It's like, come on, guys. We're not doing this, right? Like, can we please just figure this out? Like, just get the thing going here. Like, just, yep. I for those who didn't see the tweet, it was basically just saying that, like, there's some, they're not talking the sides, and there's more realistic of a February 1st start date, 48 games. It's like, you can't get left behind here. The NBA is going to be in full swing, NFL playoffs, like, people are going to forget you exist. Like, the golf season is going to be starting up then even. Like, there's going to be other stuff on. Like, you can't be forgotten about. And I think they'll be fine once they play this Canadian division in all of Canada. They'll be fine. And I think the ratings will be great here. But they're going to be atrocious in the States. And they got to build it in the States. So big deal or no deal, the NHL starting on February 1st, Gunner.
Huge deal. Figure it out. Start as close to January 1 as we possibly can. That's not that hard. You mentioned the golf season starting up. There's a little golf event happening later this week. I don't think I'm as excited about it as I should be. I'll tell you what it is when we continue on Sportsnet tonight. You know what? I said we're going to talk about golf. Long story short, Peyton Manning, Steph Curry, Phil Mickelson, Charles Barkley, they're They're having a match this weekend. I'm not that fired up about it. I'm not. I got to be honest. Look, these are three of my least favorite athletes going involved in this, and Charles Barkley. That is definitely the crux of it. I just, like, I'm done. I've seen enough Peyton Manning yucking it up in my life. I never want to see another commercial ever since he thanked Papa John's after winning his Super Bowl and wanted to wash down a nice cold Budweiser. I've had my fill of Peyton Manning. I don't ever want to see him. You just heard my opinions on Steph Curry, and I know you can't stand Phil Mickelson. I'm out. Of course, I'm still going to watch, but I'm out on the match.
I'm interested in the fact that by most betting houses, you can get Phil Mickelson as a dog. They're an underdog heading into this against Steph and Phil and Steph and Peyton. And I know that Steph is a scratch golfer, but I don't know. I think there's a little value there. I mean, you're getting a three-time Masters champion as a dog in a golf match versus guys who aren't professional golfers, except for Steph when he had to go out on the tour in front of those poor web.com guys and make them feel like idiots because he went out there and he's like, oh, I just want to try this out because I'm Steph Curry. You make $30 million, buddy. These guys are grinding to get their tour cards. Maybe just play golf at Pebble Beach for free all the time when you want. I don't know why you have to go out and show up these guys in the web.com tour, but I digress. So I'm interested in that as a dog, but I got to say, Gunnar, I gave you a little homework heading into tonight and you forgot to do it. I'm a little upset with you, okay? It's not like you have anything to worry about right now. It's not like you have a brand new child. It's not like you have, you know, a busy life. You should have listened to me and done your homework, okay?
Okay, hold on one second. Now, I'm not saying you didn't give me the homework, but you've been known to forget things from time to time. Are you 100% positive you didn't forget to give me this homework? Because I don't remember this conversation that we had about you telling me to watch a show on Netflix.
Okay, let's go back. I'm scrolling through the text. Man, we text a lot.
You want to talk about Electric Radio. Sam McKee scrolling through text messages. Basically, if you want to know what's in there, just the whole conversation about McDavid where we were ranting and raving. It's pretty much just that. And then some talk about the RSM Classic on the weekend.
Yeah, a little Streb action. Talked a lot. Okay, I did. I said, Gunning, you have homework. You got to squeeze in somewhere for our Monday show. And you said, what's that, bud? And I said, watch the first episode of We Are the Champions on Netflix about the Wheel of Cheese race. You will be blown away. And you said, sounds good to me, and I sent you a handshake emoji. So you didn't
All right.
do it.
Fair is fair. I mean, like you said, not like I'm busy or anything like that. But to my credit, I do at least know the event you're talking about, the spectacle you're talking about.
So we'll save it for Saturday for the full discussion of it. But I will just say, because you got to watch it, I will just say that the first episode of We Are the Champions, there's a bunch of other episodes that are pretty good, but the first one is amongst the most incredible episodes of television I've ever watched in my life. And I will say that. It's extremely, extremely good. And it's about the Wheel of Cheese race that they race down the hill. But it sort of focuses on some of the characters of the town, and it's all about, like, the community. It's incredible, Gunnar. You're going to absolutely love it, and I can't wait for you to watch it, and I can't wait to talk about it with you on Saturday morning. You better do your homework, young man.
Okay, but I'm going to require several. Now, see, this is where I'm just abstaining, passing the buck again. I'd like some reminders throughout the week. I will watch it. We will discuss it on Saturday. But honestly, just like I haven't seen the documentary or the episode Sam's talking about. I have seen this race many times in my life. If you haven't, just Google cheese race, England. Boys are going nuts over a wheel of Gouda or whatever type of cheese it is. Maybe we learn in the documentary. Who knows? We'll talk about it on Saturday. Oh, we do. There we go. You know what else we learn? We learn a lot when our buddy, CFL wide receiver, host of the All Ball podcast, Nate Ajay, joins us. Love to talk NFL with that guy. So much to kick around. I got a few questions for him, but the thing that's most percolating in my mind, his thoughts on Harbaugh, John at the Titans players there yesterday. Tons to get into. I know you love any and all Harbaughs, especially the one related to the Ravens, just your favorite football team there. Tons to talk about it. 1 hour left when we continue on Sportsnet tonight. Final hour of Sportsnet tonight. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Time to dive back into the NFL. And boy, there's a lot going on there. Who better to discuss it with us than our buddy? We talk to him pretty much every Monday night here. Nate Ajay, Argos wide receiver, host of the All Ball podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Tay11_. Nate, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, enjoying some Monday Night Football. Talking to two of my favorite radio hosts.
Oh, stop.
How you guys doing?
Oh, well, way better now that you're pumping our tires. I love it. So one guy there's two things I've been dying to talk to you about, just like get a player's perspective. We could talk to lots of people, not as informed as you on the X's and O's, but people who pretend to know. But it's very rare we get somebody who's kind of been in the trenches, been in these moments. I'm watching that Ravens-Titans game yesterday. I see John Harbaugh, John at players at midfield. I can only imagine how players feel about that, but I don't have to imagine because you're right here. How would you feel if you're standing there warming up for a game and the opposing coach is in your face jawing at you like that?
Ooh, nothing gets you more fired up than some pregame confrontation, especially involving coaches who believe they should still be, they believe they could be in the action just like Harbaugh was. But I understand it from Harbaugh's perspective, right? They're on the logo. He's protecting their logo. But why aren't the players over there trying to get the Tennessee guys off the field, right? It shouldn't be up to Harbaugh. Kind of disappointed in the Baltimore Ravens players because you should not send your 54-year-old coach out there to, you know, fight a battle that you should be fighting. And kudos to Tennessee. I mean, that's what you do. You go to another team's house and you take care of business and you can do things like that. You beat them once before and you're not scared of them, right? So it was fun to see. You love to see stuff like that go on. But if I'm the Ravens, I'm a little embarrassed that I let my coach go out there and fight that battle for me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think the Ravens are probably a little bit, I would say, concerned with their standing in terms of where they're looking at in the standings. I don't think anybody on that team or anybody who talks or writes about the NFL pictured them being 6-4 at this point in the NFL season. I mean, what do you make of them so far here, Nate? It really seems like they're underachieving in a big way. I mean, they're getting to the point where it's like the playoffs are starting to be a bit of a grind now. Like, they really got to start winning some games.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a disappointing season for them by their standards because they have Super Bowl hopes. Last year is such a strong start, and then a terrible finish, losing the Titans in the playoffs. But for them, they came into the season with high hopes. They've had injuries across the board, offensively and defensively, and it's getting worse because their two top running backs are out for this week on a short week with COVID on Thursday night. So it doesn't look like it's getting any better. But for them, I look at the Ravens and I watch, and I remember back in the day when the Miami Dolphins, you know, they're running the Wildcat offense, right? They caught the league by storm. It looked like every team installed it into their playbook, you know, but by the next year, they had a whole year to watch the film, you know, and understand what was going on, and it was pretty much out the league very quickly. And it's not to the same effect because obviously Lamar Jackson is dynamic, but I'm thinking about that and watching this Ravens team. Like, teams aren't, you know, falling for all their motions and all their, you know, little gadget plays anymore. You know, the teams are sound and knowing how to play that offense. They know how to, you know, stay in their lanes, and they understand that, you know, the most dangerous person on that team is Lamar Jackson. And if we stay in our lanes, there's nothing he could do. They play a lot of zone, right? Zone, everybody has their eyes on the quarterback. You're staying in the lane. You're forcing Lamar to be a quarterback, and he's just not there quite yet. And the thing about the Ravens, they have to play with the lead, right? And that's when they're most effective. Like, you see their record. They're most effective when they're playing with the lead. And when you play good teams like they've been playing and losing to, you're not always going to have a lead. So what are you going to do now? And that's something they struggle with this year. And, you know, it doesn't look like it's getting any better. And they're facing a 10-0 Pittsburgh team. I don't know where that win is going to come from.
Yeah, not on Thursday. I think we could all pretty much guarantee that. You know, I'm happy you mentioned kind of Lamar and his struggles kind of throwing the ball there, because the thing I've kind of questioned about this is, you know, obviously he has to wear some of that. He has struggled with that this year, but it also feels like, you know, when they were having the season they had last year, Greg Roman was getting a ton of credit for the way that offense clicked. And, you know, I just can't help but think, you talk about teams have film on him now, they adjust. It feels like it should partially at least be on Greg Roman to make it a little easier for Lamar to throw the ball, or do you think that's simply just kind of asking too much of him at this stage of his development?
Yeah, you know, at first, you know, you have to play to your quarterback strength, right? When Lamar Jackson first takes over for Joe Flacco, you have to do what he's best at because he's a young quarterback and he's going to struggle if you throw too many things at him. I know we saw that with Mike Vick early in his career. They tried to turn him into a drop back passer and it didn't go too well. He ran the ball well, but it didn't go too well passing. Now Lamar Jackson, Greg Roman, he has to bear that because you see this with Greg Roman's offense. Like when he was the Bills and Tyrod Taylor was there, they were really effective on the ground. They had LeSean McCoy, and they were really effective on the ground. But then they just couldn't do enough in the passing game to really take over, and that's the problem with you see Greg Roman, and he's kind of forced the issue with Lamar. We want to see Lamar develop, not just into an average passer, and it opens up so much, right? So put him at Lamar in these situations where, you know, he's comfortable throwing, and the best way to do that is like go to Lamar. He's like, Lamar, which concepts do you see well? Do you understand well? Spend extra time teaching him these passing concepts. Emphasize the pass. Emphasize getting receivers open. Maybe invest in a top receiver here or there in the draft. You know, help him out in that aspect and really, really push that issue, because that's when they're going to make that's what's going to make the difference with them. We know he can run. Everybody knows he can run. But now you've got to, you know, it's almost like that basketball player who's like DeRozan. If DeRozan ever developed a 3-point game, he'd be one of the top 5 players in the league, right? But he's comfortable in that mid-range, and he's a fantastic mid-range player. But if he can just develop that 3-ball, he's somebody else. And Lamar, you're not asking him to be Peyton Manning, right? You're not asking him to be Tom Brady making checks at the line at pinpoint accuracy. Just be average, right? And they can unlock that offense. So it is on the OC, but it's also on Lamar to want to, you know, expand his game as well. So I put him more on the OC, though, because Lamar's still young.
So going from a team that needs their QB to be, average to from above average to a team that needs him to be just average. And I'm talking about the Eagles here, Nate. And, you know, like I was talking about earlier in our show, I watched a insane amount of that game for some reason. I had some fantasy implications in it, so I had it locked on my TV for quite some time. And let me tell you, I was pretty disappointed in watching a lot of that game. And I'm just sitting here pondering, wondering what the Eagles can possibly do with Carson Wentz. And I really don't know the answer, but do you have any of the answers of what they can do with him? What they can possibly, you know, bench him for a couple weeks, maybe try to, you know, give Jalen Hurts some momentum here? I just have no idea how to handle that situation.
Yeah, you know, you see this week already, Doug Peterson has come out and said, you know, he needs to do a better job getting Jalen Hurts some more playing time. So it's already starting. And Carson Wentz is just bizarre and puzzling. I just don't understand, because this guy, we talked about it all the time, he's got all the talent in the world. But there's a disconnect between what he is coached to do and what he actually goes out there and does. I know half the turnovers, they're like just his fault. Like, he's not coached to do those things. No, it's a 3-step drop. You have to get the ball up because all the routes and all the protection are set up for you to take 3 steps, a hitch, and get it out. And you're not doing that. You're holding the ball like, you know, you've got all day. And that's just something that's going on. And I bet he's terrific in practice. I bet he's in practice lighting it up in shorts and a T-shirt. And they're like, okay, we got some. But then he gets to the game, and then there's just a disconnect. And the belief, you can tell the belief is turning on him a little bit. You know, when you've got a great quarterback and you go into these games, right, you know, no matter what happens, you know, we can get down. Like the Chiefs, for example, they got Mahomes. They get down, they're like, no matter what, we know some way, somehow, we're going to pull this out and get a win, some way, somehow. But with the Eagles, you know, his teammates are watching. It's like, okay, even if we do get a lead, some way, somehow, Carson Wentz is going to fumble it away and we're going to end up losing, right? So you could tell the belief is winning, and the calls for Jalen Hurts is getting louder and louder. I don't know what you can do, man. I think the only thing you can do is give Hurts a little bit more playing time and light that fire under his butt. But I don't know. They've tried everything. They tried different types of plays. They tried, you know, giving Hurts a play here and there. He's making mistakes that you're not coached to do. And as a coach, the guy's making over $100 million as a franchise quarterback. You can't really bench him, right? So I don't know. It's a tough situation to be in, but yeah, you got to find Hurts some more playing time.
Yeah, well, he's got them in the division lead, so you can't say anything bad about him, right, Nate? Like that, just that powerhouse
in the history of football.
My God, like what? I don't think this has ever happened. I don't know who's gonna win it. Who do you think's gonna win? I have absolutely no idea who's gonna win that division.
No idea, but I see Dallas winning yesterday. They're feeling themselves. They got the easiest strength of schedule. I don't know. It's like, I don't know. I have no idea. I'd take 2 teams before ahead of the Eagles right now. I'd take the Giants and the Cowboys right now, just the way they're playing. You know, you trust them a little more. I just don't trust Carson Wentz. I could never go into the game and feel good just because Carson Wentz is over there doing Carson Wentz things, you know. So I'd take 2 teams before I take the Eagles right now.
Okay, so if we're gonna talk about that division, I don't know if you saw this story. I'm sure I'm making way too much of it, but I can't get enough of it. Mike McCarthy brought watermelons and a sledgehammer into his team's meeting room on Saturday night to try to, I think, fire up the boys, is I think what's going on there. You're in that locker room. Are you laughing? Are you trying to find a way to kind of take it seriously and fire yourself up? Or maybe actually this is the better question. Do you have any stories of coaches with some ridiculous motivational techniques before a big game?
I definitely do. And if I was in that Dallas locker room, I would be laughing and hyped up because it shows that Mike McCarthy, he's at least trying something. He's not just throwing in the towel and saying, oh, man, all right, man, we got another game, whatever. No, he's trying something. Guys see something new in the locker room and they get excited. Football players, you know, they're really smart guys, but simple things motivate us. You put that bulletin board stuff up, you know, we're motivated. You smash some watermelons, we're motivated. But I remember in a playoff game, and this didn't happen, this didn't go well for us, but before a playoff game last year against Hamilton, our O-line coach, you know, he puts up, you know, he brings into the locker room $25,000 in cash. Right. And obviously CFL players are not making the same kind of money NFL players are making. $25,000 in cash. He's got security with him, like we're gonna steal his money. But either way, he brings $25,000 in cash. We're all like going crazy because a lot of us haven't seen that money in you know, physical form, right? That's like a down payment on a house and we don't see that money in physical form. So we're going crazy. He's like, you know what? This is what we're fighting for this week. Y'all want this? Go get it. Everybody, we all mobbed him. He crawled out of there because he thought we were going to take his money. But nevertheless, we were hyped. We were ready to play. We went out there. We got blown out by Hamilton, right? So either way, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it works. It obviously matters what happens on the field. But, you know, it goes without saying. At least he's trying something.
Oh, man, that's an amazing story. We had something similar happen before a show, but it was just with a couple of Timmy's gift cards because you think CFL money, you know, it's even a little lower for us radio guys. But, yeah, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, that's an incredible story. I'm so happy we heard that. I feel like an O-line coach, you know, it's like if it's not going to be the strength coach, O-line feels like the guy to try to really rally the troops there if it's not going to be the strength coach.
Oh, 100%. Every time you see an O-line coach, they got raspy voice. They got a dip in their mouth. You know, they're trying to fire anybody up they see. Their whole job is just to fire dudes. They're dealing with the biggest dudes on the team, right? And oftentimes, they're not the biggest dudes themselves. So they've got to try to find an advantage. So oftentimes, it's with their voice. It's with their demeanor. It's with their look. They're never happy guys. They're always kind of grungy. They got that gruff look to them. And you know, their words carry a lot of weight. And when they speak up, everybody listens.
Yeah, so that's a great story. So I found myself watching that Chiefs game last night, and I don't know if this is a weird feeling, but I feel like I'm kind of taking Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs for granted. I just kind of feel like, you know, I watched them, and when Derek Carr scored that touchdown, I don't know how long they had to go the whole length of the field and have Travis Kelce score. But it really just felt like it was going to happen. And it wasn't even like, it's almost like it wasn't even that exciting to me anymore because it's just like, I expect them to to do that. Is that crazy? Or like, does anybody else feel that same way about it? Or it's just, I feel like I have not fatigue because I do like watching them play, but I just take for granted how great they are now. It's just, it's an unbelievable team to watch. They've gotten to that point for me.
Yeah, I had the same feeling too because their car scores, right? They go up in a minute 30. I'm like, a minute 30, man, they can do that in like one play. They might leave too much time on the clock for the Raiders to come back. But I'm thinking about it. I'm like, wow, when have I ever, like, don't feel like, don't take this for granted, like you said, because that's not normal. Like, you watch these other teams play and they try to, you know, execute a 2-minute drill and nothing happens. And, you know, you're like, okay, now the football is hard, but he makes it look so easy. And it always reminds me of, like, you know, watching the Golden State Warriors in their dynasty run, right? They'd be down by 20. You know, 3 minutes later, they're up and they're up by 20. And you're like, okay, what happened? What did I just watch? And after a whole year of seeing that, you kind of get bored by it, right? It's still, like, fun to watch, but you just get kind of bored and you expect it every time. And if they ever do lose, you're like, what? How? Right? That's not supposed to happen. So I've gotten to that point with the Chiefs where I just expect them to pull out whatever lead is going on. They're just a great enough team where whatever lead happens, they got Pat Mahomes. You know, their style of play is conducive to coming back all the time because they're always playing up-tempo. They're always throwing the ball. So when you have to do that when it matters most, you've been doing it all game anyway, right? So it's nothing new. The teams that have trouble, like the Rams, where they're, you know, run-heavy play action, they have to, when they have to execute a 2-minute drill, they're like, oh, man, this is all new, right? This Jared Goff has been handling the ball off the whole game doing play action. Now your play actions aren't as effective because they know you have to throw the ball. So with the Chiefs, yeah, it's always exciting to watch them. It just now I'm like numb to it. I just expect it, right? Because you've seen it so many times.
The thing that's like wild about Mahomes too is like I think everyone has kind of properly calibrated themselves to expect the greatness from him, but he protects the ball so well. Like he does not give it away. I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, we're so conditioned to, or maybe it's just me, but it's like the kind of Brett Favre gunslinger. It's like, well, if he's going to be making plays like that, he's going to be throwing some ducks to the other team. And he just does such an incredible job of protecting the ball. Like it's not just that he's so talented. It feels like he never forces anything, but that's not true because he fits the balls in windows that nobody can. And he's constantly chucking it deep. It's just, it's amazing for such a game-breaking talent that there just isn't the mistakes.
Yeah, that's a great point because you would think, you know, the number of yards and the touchdowns and the type of offense they have that he'd be putting the ball in harm's way. But that's a credit to Andy Reid as well. Like, he's scheming guys open, you know, like running wide open, especially the last play of the game, you know, cover two defense, and Kelsey's running wide open down the middle. Mahomes takes off. You know, that stuff is all talked about. You know, Mahomes did that for a reason because he's coached up to do that. And, you know, they gave Tyreek Hill in space, landing him at the number three, making him run across the field against, you know, your third best cornerback. And, you know, just stuff like that, you know, all the motions you see before just to try to create mismatches and open spaces. And, you know, if you give Mahomes just a little slither of space, man, that guy, he's got the arm talent to be able to fit the balls in wherever he needs to. And the wherewithal and the brain and the awareness to never, you know, put the ball in real harm's way. And I think it's a credit to his talent and also Andy Reid where, you know, they're scheming guys wide open and, you know, their scheme, you know, really protects him in that aspect where he's not just like back there like Joe Burrow, like, okay, man, I got to pass the ball 40 times a game because my team is so bad.
Oh, yeah, and that's, boy, that's a gut punch to the league to kind of see what Burrow went through. And man, you mentioned the kind of how creative the Chiefs offense is. It's like they just set people up with stuff. It's 2 weeks ago they had Mahomes on the move catching the snap. Then last night they put him in motion, go to Kelsey. He throws a little shovel pass to Allaire. Like, it's just – it's amazing how creative it is, and it's just so fun to watch. I couldn't imagine kind of being a fan of that team, seeing it week in, week out. Nate, we're going to run, but just checking in quickly on a favorite game of ours, Tim Brady, Tom Brady. He was looking Tomish, and he threw an all-time duck about 10 minutes ago at the beginning of this interview. So I don't know. I think it's unfair to judge in the middle of the game. I guess next week we'll have to check in whether we saw Tom or Tim. Nate, love chatting with you, bud.
Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. Yeah, love chatting with you guys. It's always fun. Brett and Sam, I love this. It's my favorite part of the week, man. I love you guys. Oh. I love your show. I love what you guys do, man. Keep it fun. I love it. It's talk to you next week.
There we go. There he goes. Love that.
Flattery will get you everywhere in
it. Oh, it will. So will stories about O-line coaches bringing 25 cash in the room and having them get mobbed. Oh, man, I love that. You know, sometimes you ask somebody, hey, you got a story for us? And you never know. Half the time it's, nah, not really. And it's because there's great stories, but they don't want to tell on air. But I'm happy I asked because that was a great story from Nate.
Loved it. Always love talking to him. And, yeah, you know, that I hate saying it, but, like, yeah. The Chiefs' fatigue is kind of setting in. It really is. Like, it's just like, yeah, oh, well, yeah. They're going to throw 100 touchdowns. They're going to win by 25 points, and it's just, you know. Or they're down going into the final drive of the game. Yeah, they're going to win. Like, they're just so good. So it's just hard to picture anyone in the AFC even sniffing beating them in a playoff game.
Well, he said they're like the Warriors in that it's like the 20-point comeback is always right around the corner, and it feels like they're like the Warriors in that it just kind of feels inevitable right now. I guess it's the NFL, and who knows what can happen. You know, Dan Burrito, we had our producer on Saturday asking us if our Super Bowl prediction has changed. No, I think we all still like the Chiefs, and then we could talk ourselves into any half of the teams in the NFC, but yeah.
Yeah, and who did I say? I said Rams, right? Rams and Chiefs?
Yeah, I said Seahawks.
Yeah, I'm liking the Rams. And by the way, these jerseys get killed, right?
We talked about this. It's the logo. The jerseys are good. Bad logo, though.
The bone color, that color that's like quote-unquote bone, they are beautiful, dude. I absolutely love them. They're one of my favorite jerseys in the league. Is that a hot take? I love them. I think this is a beautiful jersey matchup tonight.
I was just going to say, they're back to the Mike Allstott pewter in Tampa because heaven forbid you had Tom Brady wearing those bad alarm clock jerseys. We talked about our producer on the weekend. That was Dan Marino. Our producer tonight, Sho Ali. He's going to hop in next, kick around any number of topics. Who knows where we're going to go? Couple segments left on Sportsnet tonight. Sportsnet tonight. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Great job tonight by our producer, Sho Ali. Especially booking our buddy, Nataya J. Always love talking to that guy. He served us up Luke Fox on a platter to talk about an all-Canadian NHL division. Really, just everything we could possibly ask for. So, Sho, good job by you. How you doing tonight?
Good, guys. Good. Good stuff tonight by you guys.
Thank you, Sho.
So this is the pat on the back part of the show, I think.
That's right.
Well,
everyone
did a phenomenal job. Yeah, everyone's done a phenomenal job. I love everyone involved, except Danielle.
Whoa, shots.
I'm joking. I love Danielle.
She didn't even play any simple plan for me tonight, so I think Danielle did a good job.
No,
all right,
Sho,
what do you got?
All right, you know what? I had seen this on Twitter earlier, and I think it was about the NFL, I think, because the Monday Nighter is going on. The question was, who's a player that is super underrated or doesn't get enough love? And I think they were talking about Keenan Allen, Chargers wide receiver. But I'm wondering for you guys, and Brent, maybe we can start with you. If we expanded this to all sports, is there a name that jumps off the board about a player that is super underrated or someone that doesn't get as much love as they should?
Yep, this is the most hockey guy answer you could possibly get, and I think we have about another 3 weeks of this being the case because he's kind of everybody's guy. It's Anthony Cirelli of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mm. Just an incredible two-way
force. Baby Bergeron.
That's right, scoring big goals in the Memorial Cup. Oh, just an all-time force for Team Canada. Great two-way center, learning under the tutelage of Stamkos and Braden Point. Having said that, I think every hockey guy in the world believes that, so that's why I said I'm sneaking this in before we have to pick somebody new. The answer is almost certainly some second pair defenseman that gets no love in a market no one cares about. That's probably the right answer.
Jonas Brodin.
It was Jacob Slavin until the Hurricanes started playing the Leafs a whole bunch, and then nope, that can't be him anymore. But if you ask me to pick a guy, I think it's Anthony Cirelli because boy, I just love everything about his game. And boy, if someone wanted to offer sheet him, that'd be nice. NHL.
Yeah, really. I'm actually going to stick in the NFL, and I'm just going to go with it because I've had him on my fantasy team the last 2 years, and I absolutely love the guy, and I love watching him play. Is Cooper Kupp underrated, Sho? You're the NFL guy.
Ooh. You know what? I feel like when it comes to maybe like the pairing of wide receivers, sometimes he is – I mean, maybe it's just because of the way the Rams play, but he is sometimes a little forgotten. Having a great game tonight, though, I think.
He's a PPR dream vote. I absolutely love Cooper Kupp. I love watching him play. So give me Cooper Kupp in the NFL. The NHL, I think, you know, Anthony Cirelli is the perfect hockey guy answer. I really don't know if I can go. I'm trying to think MLB, but you know what? There's just so many players in the MLB. So there's so many guys. Like the guy who won Rookie of the Year, was it Devin Williams for the Brewers? Is that his name? I literally had never heard of him before, so he's really underrated in my world. So that's good. So that's a good one. But yeah, give me Cooper Kupp in the NFL, Sho.
What about like historical guys, like guys who are no longer active? Are there guys who have like been retired in any of these leagues, whether it's the NFL, the NHL, baseball, hockey, whatever that you think maybe didn't get as much love as they should have when they were still playing?
I got one for you.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Anthony Parker was a sick Raptor. I feel like Anthony Parker gets underrated and sort of, you know. Like he never gets talked about as like not an all-time great Raptor, but a great Raptor. Anthony Parker had some years. I was a big-time Anthony Parker fan, and I was thinking about him the other day, so maybe it was just at the front of mind that I said him, but give me Anthony Parker as an underrated player from my past that I used to love and think doesn't get the credit he deserves.
I'll stick in the NBA as well, and you want to talk about a favorite of mine. Now, I actually don't know that this guy's truly kind of underrated, but I'm going to tweak the question a little for a guy who, if he were around today, the way this game is played, he would have been viewed oh so much differently, and that's Rasheed Wallace. You know, this is a guy who was a character in the league for long. You know, I spent a little on those Pistons teams, as they should. It just I don't know that he's underrated because I think he's just such a character. People loved him and what he meant to all those teams, but it feels like if he would have come along like even just 4 years later, he would have been viewed as an absolute all-time beast as opposed to just a great player in his time.
That's a great answer, Gunner.
That is a great answer. Yeah, Rasheed Wallace. Yeah, that's someone I didn't think about. Apparently, he is. He was up there too when Fred VanVleet. I don't know if you guys saw that stat about VanVleet getting the biggest ever deal for an undrafted free agent, and now that he has gotten his new deal, and he, I think, beat out Wes Matthews, and the guy Wes Matthews beat out was Rasheed Wallace, I think, which is kind of cool.
Fred's number one in that, eh?
Yeah, now he is now. Yeah, apparently, like it's the most money.
Makes sense.
It is a monster
deal.
It is absolutely. Yeah.
It makes sense.
You were talking about fantasy, Sam, and the Taysom Hill fantasy quagmire has been, I think, looming over a lot of people this week. And I had seen today that it certainly looks like his eligibility, TEQB eligibility, not very common, is being stripped by ESPN. And there were some people, I think not in our league, for example, Sam, but I think in other leagues that I'm in, people started Taysom Hill at tight end this week. Where did you guys fall? Is that unfair? Is that like cheating of some kind? Like, where do you guys fall on that?
Well, first of all, who has an ESPN fantasy league? Like, come on. Get it together. Like, it's 2020. Like, Yahoo or bust. And no, you got to take advantage of the, you know, fantasy is a cruel beast, show. I'm in dead last every year in our fantasy league. And, you know, the one year I'm finally good, everybody decides to get rid of the keepers. When, you know, I'm finally good, it's like, oh, yeah, let's just get rid of it. Reset the rules. Who cares about this year? Anyways, I'll get off my soapbox here. But, yeah, you got to take advantage of it. Of course, Taysom Hill, he has the tight end eligibility. Well, how many points did he end up with yesterday? Probably over 20, right? So you
got
to really.
Yeah,
so you got a great little, you know, boost. And you got rewarded for having Taysom Hill on your team or being able to pay the waiver dollars to get him on your team. So I feel like that is completely above board, completely fine.
Here's where I land on it. If you went out and spent a little waiver wire money on him, okay, sure. But if he's been just sitting there as some backup QB you've had all year, I don't like it. And look, win with honor, okay? Do you want to be a dirty cheat champion like, oh, I don't know, the Houston Astros? Or do you want to be a winner that will go down in all time in your fantasy league? If you want to be viewed as a respected champ for everything you have and hold dear in fantasy leagues, which are oh so important, come on, win with a little class. Get Taysom Hill out of here at tight end. I have no time for this.
Okay, I wasn't expecting you to have such hot feelings about that. I
cards on the table. I dug down to gin that up. I really reached within. But I've talked myself into it. Win with honor. Don't be the Astros.
Look, I haven't won a fantasy football league in my entire life. Like, I've had some thirds, I've had a second, but I've never won one. So if I have a chance to win one and I can cheat the system, I'm doing it, baby. So give me Taysom Hill starting at tight end.
All right, I like it, Sam. I also appreciate Gunning's passion, even though ginned up like you said, but still, I appreciate Guns.
He would have outscored that bum Jared Cook for the, at tight end. That's for sure. I don't know. I'm starting that guy every week. Good
yeah,
lord.
Yeah, Jared
Anyways.
Cook was brutal this week out, no doubt. But yes, if you're one of those people listening and you have him in your tight end slot, apparently if you leave him in there, you don't change your roster, I don't know that ESPN
really?
Is going to kick him out. Yeah, I think it'll
Love
be one of
that.
Those things where it
Lock.
Like locks your roster,
Lock.
But like yeah, but.
chicanery. I don't like it. I don't like the chicanery. Not one bit.
ESPN and the chicanery. Let's move actually out of sports, if you guys are okay with that.
I got this.
This happened to me today, actually. I was wondering what you guys thought. So I'm buying my Christmas presents mostly online, of course. You know, you're buying Amazon, Best Buy, that kind of stuff. And I got something from my parents. And instead of getting one of these things, I got several of them. The company Amazon, they sent in the box, four of them instead of just one, and I'll return them later this week because I actually don't need them, nor do I have the space for these things. They were keyboards, if you're wondering. They gave me, I'm not kidding, I got four keyboards.
Oh my god. Okay, hold on, let's take like playing piano keyboards.
Yeah, thank you.
No, sorry, like computer keyboards.
My god, show if you were talking about those being keyboards, I've literally been talking about taking piano lessons for like the past 4 years and never done it. If you sent back a keyboard without giving me one of those, I would have been mad. But okay, anyways, continue.
Yeah, a wireless keyboard mouse combo for your computer.
Oh,
my mom's a old desktop computer. Yeah, she really wanted one. It was on sale Black Friday. It was great, right? But I got like four of them, and I don't. I mean, what do I need that for? But my question to you guys is, What is something, whether it was just pure luck, an error, or anything like that, that you lucked out on getting? Like, you could even say, like, you found $5 on the side of the street or an old pocket or anything like that, but something you, like, felt really lucky to get.
Okay. We're going deep down here, but I found a $50 bill on the street once when I was like a young kid, and it was like the most exciting moment of my life. And I was like, I don't know, I was like 10 or 11, like I was young, and my parents made me take it back to, like, they made me take it to like the police station and hand it in. So there you go. How's that?
All I could. Oh, well, what you said,
I have, actually, and also another one. Okay, I hope my parents aren't listening to this. But this has happened. This just happened to Allison and I recently. But by the way, am I hearing music in the background of this, or am I going crazy?
No, think you're crazy.
Okay, cool. Okay, now that that's cleared up, we're good. My parents sometimes during COVID, they're unbelievably sweet people, but they'll send, you know, like a care package to my place with like some food, like maybe some soup, a couple of beers from up there. Like they're just really incredibly sweet people. Anyways, my parents and I, we had this cooler that they sent the care package in, and in the front pocket was an envelope, and in the envelope was $50, and it said MAA on it, which is my mom's initials. And I can guarantee you it was my dad who, like, probably got yelled up and down for where the hell that $50 went, and I really hope they're not listening. But they probably are. That's the worst part. So, anyways, I digress.
Now they know.
Well, next trip up to the Sound will be fun to hash that out.
I'll be like, Dad, here's $50 because I took yours.
All I can think of when you said your parents made you take it back, I'm like, did you have to glue it to the street where you found it? And then you clarified the police station. Okay, that makes sense.
I took it to the police station, was like, I found this $50. The guy working there was probably like, why the hell didn't you just keep it, dude? Anyways.
So all I can think of is, you know, like we've all got lucky with maybe the extra burger in our fast food bag, or the extra order of fries. Like we've all, like that's as good as it gets, you know. Maybe hey, we're as Canadian as it gets, you know. Maybe you get 22 Timbits in your pack of 20, whatever it may be. But I actually, this is now taking me back, and it's painting me to when I was on the other side of this. Now, one of the first CDs I remember buying, going to Yorkdale, buying a Nas CD. Okay,
ooh,
yeah, that's a little
Illmatic?
Insight into what. So yeah, it was. That's a little insight into what young Brent Gunning
phenomenal
was like.
Phenomenal album.
And then I went. Well, I wouldn't know, because after I had bought the CD, I went to an ATM in the mall and I had set it down, and then I took out my cash, and I was more concerned about putting the cash in my wallet. I left the CD there, and I had realized about 30 seconds later as I walked away, oh, crap, I don't have my CD I just bought, and it was gone. So somebody sniped a Nas CD from young Brent Gunning at Yorkdale. So there. I can't say I was on the good side of it, but hey, I hope you enjoyed it out there, because I'll never know how good that album was. That's a lie. I knew exactly how good it was. It's tremendous.
That's an amazing album. One of my all-time faves.
I thought for a second, Gunning, you were going to say that you opened the CD case and there was no CD inside.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought you were going to. I really didn't know where it was going, but I love it.
That's too good. You know what? Not a word of a lie. A couple of weeks ago, my roommate and I, we ordered McDonald's. As you guys know, I enjoy McDonald's from time to time.
We're aware.
It's a trust tree. I love McDonald's, too. I may or may not have gotten McDonald's breakfast Uber Eats on Sunday morning. Anyways, continue.
It's so good. So good. I ordered a Big Mac, and I opened the Big Mac box, and, like, the bread and lettuce and sauce was in there, but the meat was not. It was a meatless Big Mac. I've never felt more robbed in my entire life.
Wow. That is brutal.
I'd be charging the gates. Like, you want to talk about protesting in the streets for all that's right in the world. I need the patty in my Big Mac.
Where
what are you giving
is
me?
The meat?
Yeah,
where
honestly, what is this?
Meat?
Just some slop, a slop bun and some lettuce. Got some pickles in there. Oh, it sounds disgusting. I'm happy you noticed before you bit in, because me, I would just be so fired up to get into that thing.
Up.
I would have taken a big bite of just bun and lettuce and mac sauce. It would have been no fun at all. So, my heart aches for you there, Sho.
The worst part about it really was that because I ordered the food with my roommate, I just happened to reach into the bag first and pick that one out. If I had been a kinder soul and let him pick it out, I probably would have gotten the real Big Mac.
That's brutal.
Wow. So
that's,
did you eat it?
Tough break. Bad beat.
I took like 3 bites, and you know what? I do like Big Mac sauce, so I ate most of it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I would have eat it. I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah. Here's the thing with a Big Mac. Everyone's not like, wow, the meat is so good. Like, it's not like a Chuck burger or something. Like, it's right. Just like they're little thin patties. It's all about the sauce. It's all about the toppings. So I could picture it still being somewhat good.
It wasn't bad, honestly. It wasn't bad. I think it's actually, in all honesty, a real menu option for vegans, I think. I think that's legitimately what it is. But obviously, like, you know, I can't imagine many vegans go to McDonald's. I could be wrong on that, but I mean, I don't know. Okay, well, I got one more for you guys. And I saw this thanks to our coworker, our friend, Mark Boffo. And Boffo tweeted, or I guess he quote tweeted it, and it was some guy in one of those random Twitter questions you see all around. I thought you guys would be good to ask this one. What's the best fake song? A song that exists, these are the criteria, a song that exists in the world of a show or a movie, but not our world. And I saw Rob Wong and Boffo and some other people tweeting about it. The best fake song. Mine, just so you guys can think about it a little bit, mine is, if you remember from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Man of Constant Sorrow by the Foggy Bottom Boys.
Incredible song. The thing, though. That crossed over show. That was like a popular soundtrack. So what does the statute of limitations, like, does Star is Born count?
You know what? For the purposes of this, let's say it counts. Let's say that kind of stuff counts.
Star is Born, far and away, the best song ever. Give me In the Shallows. That song is a 10 out of 10 banger. So give me that one.
Okay, right. So I don't disagree if that fits the criteria, but I feel like it is a bit of a cop-out answer. Like, that's just a real popular song. Now, my answer, I tweeted this out earlier. I don't know if you guys are fans of the show Righteous Gemstones. But I feel like this song it's right up to the line where people know it, but it didn't become a popular song like Star is Born song in The Shallow. It's Misbehavin' by Billy Bob Ray or whatever their names are.
Yeah.
I was bumping that earlier. It's incredible. I was reading a thing. Danny McBride wrote it himself. Obviously, he had a little help with the musical arrangements and stuff. But I read an article about how like crucial it was to like the arc of that show, that you needed to believe that they were, you know, these kind of super musical pastors and everything. And
that's
my answer. It's an incredible, incredible song. And I feel
that
like
the show is a must see.
Oh,
if you haven't seen it, it's incredible.
It's amazing. And I think it walks right up to the line, but doesn't cross over it. So that's my answer there. Give me Misbehavin'.
I also have a honorable mention is the song by the Zit Remedy in Degrassi. Everybody wants something you'll never give up. Right? Zit Remedy?
Yeah.
Everybody
okay, I got
that?
It. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
How do you guys feel? I only thought about this one just as you're saying that, Sam. But remember Love Actually? They had that Christmas Is All Around Me song by Billy Mack, who I think is played by Bill Nighy, I believe, in the movie. What do you guys feel? That a banger? No? Okay? Where do you fall
on that song?
It was like Christmas Is All Around Me. It's like the song of the show at the beginning of the movie.
I don't think I've seen the movie.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, this will shock you. A little bit of a blind spot for me there. Yeah, I also am out on it. So, hey, Christmas is around the corner. My understanding, a holiday movie. Maybe I'll have to give it a go.
Let's do it.
Neither of you guys have seen Love Actually.
Nah, I'm aware. Is that the one? The guy standing at the door with the postcards?
With the
like I got the gist of it. Like the cue cards. Like he's on SNL. I got the gist of it, but can't say I've seen it.
Is Love Actually the one with like all the different famous people in it, like Ben Affleck and
not Ben Affleck, but it is like a tale
Jennifer
of different.
Aniston. That's not that one.
No, it's like the guy from The Walking Dead and Colin Firth and so on.
Oh,
like it's Keira Knightley.
Yeah, okay, I know the one. I've never seen it, but that's like a super popular one. Maybe look, you know what? Allie will probably like that one. Maybe we'll sit down and watch that one for some time over Christmas. We've got a lot of time to kill, so might as well get into the flicks.
If you guys ever have Dave McCarthy on from NHL, NHL.com, Dave loves Love Actually, all right? There's a tidbit for you.
That's fair. You know what? I don't really know a ton about Dave McCarthy. You know, I've spent some time with him at the Leafs games, talked to him a lot. That shocks me. That does shock me that he loves Love Actually. But
I'm right there with you. I find myself just as shocked. But hey, maybe we're starting to put together next Monday's show already. Me and McKee are going to watch Love Actually with our respective partners, and then bring on Dave McCarthy to talk about it.
Quickly, show. I know you love to watch stuff. Have you watched We Are the Champions on Netflix?
You know, I have not. I saw your tweet about it, though.
Oh my God. You have to watch it, guys. All right. Can't believe I. The first episode, like I said, the next five or however many, they're okay, like just okay. They're the James Reimer of TV episodes, just okay. Right. But the first one is the Martin Brodeur of television episodes. It's unbelievable. It's so good. So I cannot highly recommend it enough.
I'll watch it this weekend.
There we go. I have to watch it before Saturday. I've been given my homework. This is twice. It's like I'm right back in grade six math. I tried, I swear. No, I didn't. I just forgot. Show, great job tonight putting together the lineup. Thanks for kicking that around with us.
Yeah, good stuff, guys.
All right, there he goes. Producer Show Ali. Great job tonight by Danielle as well. Keeping us on the air, on the wheels of steel, as they like to say. Now, there's a couple things we got to kick around. There's a, speaking of kick in the grass is coming up when we're done. TFC got a playoff game. I'm going to let you talk about that. I might even wade into an opinion of myself. One segment left on Sportsnet tonight. Just tying up a few loose ends here on Sportsnet tonight, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee, including the mystery of whether or not music was playing during the last segment. Now, I don't know if it means I'm screaming or I'm deaf, but we do have a texter. One of my neighbors, in fact. Not that I know them, but hey, they're all my neighbors in Burlington.
Oh, I thought you already met some friends. I was like, let's go, Gunner.
No, please, come on. You know me. I shoveled my neighbor's driveway, and I said, thanks. Sorry about the screaming baby, and that's about all the social interaction I plan on having until it's golf season. If I can, there's a golf course not far away, and if I can find a golf dad in the neighborhood, believe me, I'll take it. But other than that, I don't know that there will be much friendships to be had. You know me. Bit of a hermit. I like my friends. I thoroughly enjoy spending time with them, but I got enough is kind of where I'm at, except for all my friends that I talk to here every Monday night. But someone from their car in Burlington texting in, hopefully not texting and driving, saying that they did hear music as well. So not crazy. I'm just deaf, I think, is where we were at there. So just tying up a couple of loose ends. We got a kick in the grass coming up next here on the station here. Jeff Blair, Dan Riccio going to give you everything you need to know. What I need to know, though, I'm going to the expert here. I'm flipping the tables on you, how the turntables have turned. What's going on with TFC? Do we like their chances against Nashville on Wednesday? Sam McKee.
Well, I'd be lying to you if I've told you I've ever watched Nashville play a game, so I love their chances because TFC's been great this year. TFC's have been a really excellent team all year, and it's kind of, they don't even play in Toronto, so it's like, it's kind of weird. I feel like they've... Like, there's been flying under the radar, and then there's doing what TFC's done this year. I just feel like they're so – like, we've been so starved for sports content, and we never, ever have a guest on any of our shows ever to talk about it. And, like, I love TFC, and I watch most games, and I don't even push for it. So, yeah, TFC, going to watch the game tomorrow night. They should probably win. They're one of the, powerhouses in the Eastern Conference. But, does it matter? Like, I don't know. It's just weird.
Well, it's funny because, anyone who's heard me talk about TFC on the station, I think there are people who care a whole lot. They're just all sitting at BMO when the games are being played. And I honestly don't care. I'm not going to pretend to be invested, but I ache for those people. The whole march to the match through Liberty Village, it's definitely a thing. And,
incredible atmosphere.
It is. And, I've been down there for not for a game in a long, long time, but I've been down there for some international matches as well. And it's incredible, the kind of atmosphere and everything. And it definitely sucks a little bit of the soul of not what I believe to be the city. But it definitely sucks a little bit out of it. So, hopefully, eventually Corona will be done and you'll be able to go to a match again.
But no, like for somebody who doesn't, pretend to be a soccer expert, I think, that's really well put, Gunner. A huge appealing part of TFC and what TFC is as a team is the camaraderie that the fans feel together and the fans can have when there's like, it's not that many people fit into BMO Field. It's not that many people love TFC, but the people that love TFC go to the big games together, and it's sort of like this camaraderie that they all feel that, this is our thing. We love this. We don't care that other people really love it. And when that's not – you don't have that feeling in the city, I feel like it really does get lost. So I think that's well said by you. But, Gunner, I can't get out of here without quickly mentioning Chelsea FC. Just a great weekend of soccer. A tidy 2-0 win over Newcastle. Just a gorgeous goal with the new signing, Timo Werner, hooking up with Tammy Abraham for the 2-0 goal. The Blues are looking great, up near the top of the table, as you like to say. So I'm fired up about my Chelsea Blues. Big Champions League game tomorrow. Okay, I'm done.
You can tell they're the top of whatever you want if you're talking about the Chelsea Blues. Just don't be telling me the team in blue and white here in this city is ever atop any table. I genuinely cannot properly state how mad I got when I heard Dan Riccio say that. And hey, we're all guilty. I know you don't do them. I do the updates there. You try saying the same thing for 7 hours straight. You'll find a way to have some creative fun with it. Always love hearing Dan. You'll hear him just a couple of minutes time on the station with Jeff Blair as well for A Kick in the Grass. Of course, you can also check out the podcast there as well. You can always listen to podcasts at Sportsnet Tonight, all the shows on the station. Of course, starting the day off with a lead off, then into Good Show, followed by Hockey Central at noon, Writer's Block, Tim and Sid. It is a jam-packed lineup. You can check it all out wherever you find your podcasts as well. And again, I would be remiss if I didn't hammer home the point that we both want to make tonight. If there's going to be an all-Canadian division in the NHL,
oh,
Prime Minister's Cup. Let's go. Give it to me, and I will allow a hockey team to win the treble. If that's what it takes, whatever it takes. McKee, you have ever so slightly more pull than me, and that's really just because you can text some of our hockey guys occasionally. Please, get the word out. I want it. I don't need credit. And then when I don't get credit, I'll complain about it for years down the line. It'll be on my gravestone. He should have got credit for the Prime Minister's Cup. Please give it to me. They can hand it out on the quadruple header for Canadian Thanksgiving. And before we step aside, speaking of great Canadians, happy 30th birthday, Mackenzie Hughes. Thank you guys so much for listening to Sportsnet Tonight.